Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the Hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Juice, sides, and totals. Sign up today at PrimeSportsbook.com.
Hello, friends. You're now listening to the Lifestyle, Leisure, and Sports Show you never knew was two of those things.
I think we can all acknowledge that if this fails, you two will be fired and I will remain. So, no pressure.
Bo Bishop, a regional media icon. Winner of Emmys. Purveyor of the good life.
Sir, you don't know that for a fact.
I just said it on the radio.
Also, two guys this company named Employee of the Month.
What are you talking about?
Paul Hogan is Hulk Hogan's brother. Look it up.
Because it's Hulk Hogan. That's his real name.
One guy is from Australia. The other one is from Tampa.
You mean he's from Hollywood, brother?
Not brothers. Chops.
Yes, they are.
This is Bishop and Friends.
Oh, Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan. Chops and Eric Reese are with you today. Ryan Baker running things on the other side of the glass. And you know what? This time of year, even though it's a sport that we don't pay as close of attention to as we probably should, and we definitely most of the people, two of the three people
for yourself,
normally on this show don't really listen to it. I have to do it. I love this song. Gets me into the baseball mood. You know what I do like about baseball? Are the movies. I think baseball is really good movies.
Cool. They do. I think in terms of sports movies, baseball has everybody else beat.
It's probably the easiest sport.
Happy Gilmore for golf and Caddyshack for golf. Yeah. But everything else, and you talk about the best sports movies, everybody at least has on their Mount Rushmore. We're not going to do that because we're not doing that. Everybody has a baseball movie in their Mount Rushmore of sports films.
Yes, even if you're not a huge fan of baseball.
I've got two, right.
Yeah, I think it's because you bring up golf, too. That's a good one. Because you can focus in on an individual actor or character at any given time. Pretty easy in baseball. Obviously, super easy in golf. It's an individual sport. But for baseball, while being a team sport, is the most individualized. They stand very far apart. They make the play themselves. There's not really much. When you're like a base runner or a pitcher or a hitter, there's not really something else somebody else is doing that is affecting you while you're in the middle of the play. I guess base runner, it's the other hit, but you can go from the hit to the base runner, and you got Willie Mays Hayes running around the bases. I think that's why baseball movies work better than any other one. Plus, you got John Fogerty writing songs about playing center field.
Yep.
There's nobody who ever wrote a song about, you know, put me in, coach, I want to play quarterback. Even though quarterback's the most popular position in the world, I don't know that song.
Yeah, I don't either. Scott Stapp wrote a song about Marlins and soaring.
That's true. So there's two baseball songs.
I don't think anything's able to top that from a sports song standpoint or a sports team song standpoint. But happy opening day, everybody, to those who celebrate. I know Baker, our resident Reds fan, is excited because their opening day is, you know, it warrants a parade. And any day or any event that warrants a parade's exciting in my book.
The UA coming out of him every time we mention a parade.
He's already got his chair set up.
So they already do have, at the corner of Northwest and Zollinger, have two chairs set up. And it's the Civic Association who's doing it because they're tagging with the chairs an advertisement or a teaser for the parade theme coming soon. And
the parade theme for July 4th comes out in March.
Probably April.
April. Okay. I guess that I didn't even know there were themes. What have been some of the past themes of the parade? I thought the theme was Americana.
No,
4th of July.
Because you got to give neighborhoods the theme and the time to make the float, or I guess time to prepare and make the float to match the theme.
Have you ever been on a float?
Oh, yeah. River Ridge, what, 96, 97, and maybe 98? I think one year we won.
I heard that was a banger.
It slapped, as the kids say. I remember one year we were, our neighborhood did, and this again, shout out to River Ridge, did, because The Phantom Menace had just come out. So this would have been, I guess, 99.
Okay.
And I was Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Did somebody do the face paint? Was somebody Darth
My
Maul?
My brother was Darth Maul, but he had a mask.
Okay, just the mask. Yeah. I mean, that would be an elaborate.
And we had in the neighborhood some engineers, and they built a Naboo starfighter, and it was supposed to have smoke coming out of it to represent when Anakin gets hit and flies into the Trade Federation ship, but they wouldn't let us have a smoke machine on the parade route.
Oh, man. You know, these sound pretty big, and maybe one day I do need to check out. I know it's a big deal,
Association took over the joke that was a chair way too early on Northwestern Zollinger.
Well, maybe they'll auction off the chairs, and bam, you get your seats right there, right away. They're already set up. You know where they're going to be.
I live too far, further south of Lane. Down the parade route, I don't walk up that far.
Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't be in on that.
You wouldn't
auction.
Catch me in that part of the.
Baker, you ever been as a Reds fan? You ever been down to the parade on opening day?
Yeah, probably 4 or 5 years ago, my dad and I had a stretch of about 3 opening days that we went to.
Okay.
In a row. So, you know, it's a spectacle down there. It's people
what goes on in that parade? I've never been.
It's just all kinds of stuff. We didn't get super close to the parade, but there's just people everywhere. Like, you get around Holy Grail and all that, and it's just a time for opening day. Dad actually said, you working tomorrow? There's on Tuesday. Are you working Thursday? Do you want to go down? And I was like, I think tickets are probably too much right now, and they were pretty expensive. Plus, I got to be here till 2 today doing the updates, so I don't think we would have made it in time.
That would have been a tight squeeze. You definitely would have made the game, but would you have made the first pitch at that? That would have been right on
it would have been super close, depending on traffic when you got down there and where you could get parked at and everything.
And with a parade that just went through, what streets could still be closed? What's going on there?
It looks like you got 50 and...
it's a great day.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be incredible down in Cincinnati.
But the weather's nice out in Oakland too.
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, that's the thing. I'm muted today in terms of my excitement for opening day because it's 10 o'clock tonight. And if we're being honest, which I think we should always be honest, I'm not staying up for that whole thing.
I was just talking to Shark about this. That is a travesty that Cleveland has to play opening day in Oakland. Like, that should never happen. It should be, you know, the White Sox or the Royals or somebody, the Tigers, somebody this side of the Mississippi.
It's tough to do it in the cities that you mentioned because you have the elements.
Yeah.
There was still Guardians opening day. It may have been 17 the year after. Might have been actually 16, the year they went to the World Series, where it was snowpening day, and they opened everything up. Big snowstorm the night before. They opened everything up, and then they sent fans home with like an hour before first pitch because they just couldn't clear the snow out in time, and it was just way too cold for that. So I understand logistically that it makes sense if you're going to open. If you're insistent on starting the baseball season a couple days before the month of April, it can't be played in this climate unless you have a dome.
There's been lots of times we've seen snow on an opening day situation for the Guardians up there. But I do agree with Baker that, like, yeah, it's a numbers game. Of course, half the league has to be on the road on what we consider opening day. But can't we at least line up the time zone so that your team's first game of the year is actually in a time where you're going to want to watch it?
I'd open in Tampa Bay.
This would be a tough stretch to get all the way to 10 o'clock. I mean, you're talking that's a 1 a.m. end to this game.
I just saw the Angels are playing in Baltimore. Put the Angels in Oakland and put the Guardians in Baltimore. I mean, let the fans see opening day.
Yes, and then you aren't going to be able to see the Guardians at home for a while. They start with 3 straight road series, 4 against Oakland, 3 against Seattle, 3 against Minnesota. But then they come back on Monday, April 8th, and isn't that the eclipse day?
That is.
So it's going to be like the eclipse, and then their game is at 5:10. So I think they're trying to line that up a little bit so
and
that
if
it can be experienced near
the
each
start
other.
Time. And if they already moved, it was supposed to be like a 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock 5:10 start time, now. And they've already bumped it back.
And if the season starts the way I think it's going to, you'd rather stare right into the sun than watch this Guardians lineup.
Hey, you never know with the Guardians and the Reds what the season's going to be.
I think you're right with the Reds. But I think you know with the Guardians, there's going to be a lot of one-run baseball kids. Get ready. They're going to win 74 games. They'll finish, I don't know. The AL Central is the bless your heart of baseball. 87 won the division last year. 87 wins won it last year for the Twins. Probably 90-92 will do it this season, and the Guardians will finish 10 back of that.
Yeah, I remember that last year when we were looking at the standings throughout the season, that like the Guardians, they have a chance to win the division, but they're going to have to win the division because
it's the worst division in baseball.
Nobody's getting a wild card out of there. As far as like the changes, you mentioned like, hey, it's good to be honest. The changes they made last year did speed up the game, and it does feel like, okay, whatever this was with the pitch clock and everything, it worked. But if I'm being honest, I don't think it worked enough. I don't think it's then getting me to see those numbers and see that the games are only taking 2 hours and 40 minutes instead of 3 hours or 3 hours and 20 minutes, whatever the numbers were. Okay, but it's not getting me to tune in. I don't think that was the problem. And one thing that I think is a detriment to it, and I've noticed this even at the minor league games, because they've had the pitch clock for an extra year on top of Major League Baseball, in stadium, it almost makes the game feel too fast now. And going to the stadium is the real magic of baseball. It's the best sport, in my opinion, when you actually go to it. And the changes that they're making to hopefully make it better for television, in some ways, I think, are a drawback on the in-game experience in the stadium.
Well, I think for you, there's not going to be anything that baseball can do that's going to get you to tune in to how many baseball games you watched last year. I would say
I watched a handful, but it was probably 10 or so.
You're not quite the casual fan.
Not even quite casual, right?
And I think for the casual fan, there's nothing that you can really do to get them to change how many games they watch in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Baker and I will likely watch 160, 170 games this season, right?
Ooh, I think that's a lot for me.
Okay, so that's where I'll put myself, though. And I'm talking about more than just your team. Like, you'll tune in to watch other teams play.
Very little.
Okay.
You know, I don't watch too much outside of the Reds, and a lot of times
I should have phrased that a question.
A lot of times I just got the Reds on as background noise
sure.
while I'm doing other things. But I don't know. I have a hard time watching if it's not my team, unless it's Yankees Red Sox.
That'll still get you going. I mean, it's the problem with baseball is that there are too many games, but I'm not sure that there's any amount of games you can limit it down to where it becomes something that, oh, it does become must watch because all these games matter so much, because they still have to perform the way they do because they care about their gate so much. So I don't think they're ever going to get rid of the amount of games, but I don't think that would make that steep of a difference, because we have leagues that play 82 games, and that's what we're going to get into next with the Lakers. And how much does that mean? I think that there's just a problem with baseball, and even so some of the NBA and the NHL, where there are so many games that it's easy for a fan to write off as, I don't need to watch that one. It's not important. And that's why we love football in this country so much, because you
every
build up to it
matters.
All week, and every game matters. You care about it. You want to go to those games too. You need to know what happens live. Whereas in a lot of these sports, it is sort of just you can check on the standings throughout the year and then maybe jump in playoff time. And that's unfortunate for the regular season, but it's reality. And we've seen it with the way that there are so many entertainment options mm-hmm. out there that people aren't choosing these sports anymore.
And you make a very good point with the television deals and how, you know, places like ESPN are less likely to want to lose inventory, right? They're not going to want to give up games, but I'd absolutely love to have a conversation. I'd love to see a conversation had about pushing forward in the calendar the start of the baseball season and then shortening how many games are in baseball season. Because 162, I think it's too much.
No, and hey, is 82 too much? At least one team
is
straight up just
too much.
They're straight up just saying that winning regular season games isn't the most important thing. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
We're the highest rated sports radio station in America. There's no joke there. We just are. The Fan, Ohio's sports destiny.
Hey there, friends. Bo Bishop here, and the Hoops action is heating up, and Tipico Sportsbook is the best place to bet on the playoff action. Enjoy the most rewarding sportsbook with the hottest promos. Bet on select games. Earn a bet credit for each three-pointer made. Continue to rack up the rewards with the highest cashback in the industry, with up to 5% cashback on your bets. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app today. That's promo code THEFAN100. Must be 21 or older, physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Keep your friends close and your producers closer. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
And Bishop and Friends, we're sponsored by Awaken 180. Fast, sustainable weight loss without medications. The solution for weight loss, Awaken 180 Weight Loss. So we were just talking about, well, are there too many games in baseball? Well, are there too many games in other sports? Because this is something that we've kind of kept track of just periodically throughout the year. Anthony Davis and LeBron James, both of those two especially, but it just feels like it's a part of the Lakers' philosophy that they don't really care game in and game out about winning. They do need to make the field, at least the play-in tournament, which is weird. They're not even prioritizing, it feels like, getting out of that. It's just get into the dance and we'll figure it out from there because we want to stay healthy. And LeBron James, after a win last night for the Lakers, a day or two after they played a double overtime game, so there was a lot of minutes in which LeBron didn't play really down the stretch of that one, he was asked about load management, figuring that out as we get to the end of the season, obviously in a very late stage of his career as well. And LeBron had this to say.
Just being very strategic on, obviously games and, how many days in between games and flights and things of that nature, obviously. Understanding and seeing how my ankle and my foot is feeling. But just being very smart about it, obviously. We are where we are, but our health has always been the most important for our ball club, not just one individual. But for me, looking out for myself when it comes to injury and knowing my foot and knowing my ankle and things, how it reacts and how it's been over the last couple of years. So, just always keeping a hefty eye on it.
Does the lure of moving up in the standings at all impact the way you view how you're going to manage your ankle?
I would probably try to play yesterday, but that's the case. I gotta be smart with it. It doesn't. If I'm not, healthy or any close to being healthy, then it doesn't. It's not good for a ball club, anyways. It's not good for me.
I mean, that really tells it all. Then they're asked about the allure of moving up in the standings. Does that get you to want to play or maybe push through it? And he says, probably would have played yesterday if that were the case, which is just totally, yeah, they've just let down the guys, and the load management stuff is not just taking a day off. It is the idea that they don't care so much about winning each individual regular season game that as long as they can get to the playoffs, they feel secure in their ability to navigate through that, which I don't get with the NBA play-in tournament, because right now they're the 9th seed. If the season ended today, they'd be playing the Warriors, the 10th seed, and they'd have to win that one and then win another one, the winner of the 6 or the 7-8 game, to then even get into the real playoffs, whereas if they just buckled down a little bit more, could maybe even get to that 6 seed, because they're not too far out of that. They're only 2.5 back from that. The West's a lot tighter right now than the East. They're only 10 games back from first,
right,
as the 9th seed, but only 2.5 back to get into that 6. And down the stretch, there's about 10 games left. They do not seem to be prioritizing, let's make sure we get every victory we can. They just want to be healthy once they get to the postseason, or as healthy as they can be.
Yeah, and I think it just for them, it becomes a just make it so you have a game. Make it so you have to win a game to get in. And, the Rockets are a game behind the Golden State Warriors. So, it might not even be Golden State who they play. So for the Lakers, there's no exact science behind this. There's no right way to do this. There's really no wrong way so long as you make it.
Well, but there's a right way for the league that the league wants, and that's kind of where the conundrum starts.
They would say that's the right way, but I think then you would have players like LeBron saying that's not the right way, because the league would tell you, especially with changes they've made to the MVP voting and how many games you have to play for that you mm-hmm. every game matters. Players would tell you something different. LeBron would tell you something different than a lot of other players, because he's in his 21st season plus as much playoff games that he's had. Like, he's probably played closer to 22, 23 actual seasons of basketball, and that's before you factor in everything else he did before he got to the NBA. Like, we put so much tread on our tires as human beings that, as old as he gets, he's probably just managing soreness, stiffness, injuries every single day that he's not playing a game. And then especially when he's got a game to play, he's managing injury or he's managing his body. And so being a guy that knows his body better than anybody, I think he has right now as exact of a science as he can into how, when, where I want to actually start to ratchet it up, how, when, and where I want to tone it back a little bit. And I think right now, you play that game and then really ratchet it up once the play-in starts.
Yeah, and I think we've seen this kind of issue manifest in slightly different ways with other teams, but I think the Cavs are a really good example of this, and they just lost a game last night to a not very good Hornets team, a team they just beat on at home a couple of days before. But
if you're worried about last night's Cavs game,
and that's my point.
Maybe do something else with your time.
Tomorrow night,
they have the
76ers at home. And that's something I think we've seen really from the Cavs. They haven't gone out and just said it, but they seem to pick about a couple games a week against better opponents and say, we're going to focus on this one and we're going to compete as hard as we can. And then against the Hornets, if we win, great. If we don't, we're not too worried about it. And that's an issue for the NBA. You get it from the player standpoint because 82 games is a lot of games and there's back-to-backs in the NBA. You played three, sometimes four games in a week span. So that's how they've gotten to this point. And we were just talking about, should baseball re-examine the 162 and look at that and bring it back? Would the NBA be healthier as far as getting its stars out there? Because again, you have to get the fans a reason to go out there. And the more that you have these opportunities where on the road, people are resting some of their stars because they don't want to take away the home games from their home fans. But a lot of the NBA is the traveling show of the stars that come into your town. Bo's talked about this a lot, that he had a friend who, you know, one of his kids' friends whose parent bought him tickets to go see Luka Doncic a couple of years ago. He didn't play that game. Then they went back and they got it this year and he actually did play in it. But you don't know going into the game. So would the NBA be better off instead of trying to put these stipulations on the MVP race like we talked about, something that Joel Embiid is going to fall short of now that he's missed enough games? Do they need to look at, is it just the point of getting rid of some of the games? Do they need to go down by 15 games? Would that get the stars to say, okay, that's my rest. Now we're having less back-to-backs. We're having less four games in a 7 day span. Would that get the guys to play? Because that's the most important thing for the league, is that the stars are out there every night to entertain the people who are paying to go see them and paying a premium price to do it.
Yeah, they'll never, at least in my opinion, they'll never take away total games in a season. Like, you're always going to have 82 in an NBA season. They're not going to risk that inventory. It would come from ESPN. Because I don't see a situation where the Players Association would be in a strong enough spot to demand that from the league. But I do think that would be a good place to start if you wanted to, A, make more games matter, B, alleviate injuries to some of your stars, and then C, I think that would just make the overall product better, because stuff like last night wouldn't, where I don't think it means too much for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, yeah, they lost out on the three spot, but as long as they can stay away from the Knicks in the first round, like, if you got me Cavs Magic right now as a 4-5, okay. So it's a very delicate dance that they're going to have to do, but something's got to give with this. And I also think, you know, when last year you had that 65 game, that hard cap on MVP voting, you're going to see that fluctuate. So yeah. I think they're going to start with that and then see if they can, you know, maybe reach a more amenable spot with the players.
Well, and what's it going to do when there's a guy who played 64 games who is this like clear cut MVP,
right?
And they're like, well, he's not eligible because he didn't make the cutoff. Because like Embiid he's missed enough games this year where it's like, okay, I think that's reasonable. But yeah, if there's somebody who's right around the cutoff but doesn't quite make it, one thing that I would be okay with, I think we can bring the first round back to 5-game series.
Sure.
I don't think those, you know, that's
doesn't
a small help, but, you know, they could go from only playing 3 games instead of 4 or 5 instead of 7. That's something that, yeah, could happen. And they have precedent for that. That's how they used to do it. But I think you're right. They love their 82, so many records based around that 82, right? And they don't want a scenario. Now, increasing games is really where you run into that problem. That's what the NFL is going through. All regular season records are being broken. But you also don't want to be in a situation where no regular season records could ever be approached again either.
I also wonder if roster expansion for the NBA would help, but the NBA is too star driven, because roster expansion, I think, would help with the NFL.
Yeah.
You add more games, but the NFL is not as star driven as the NBA. Or NFL doesn't need stars quite like the way the NBA does.
Even if you have a star offensive lineman, if he's out, it doesn't really affect people's enjoyment of watching the game.
You still watch the NFL. Like,
there's only so many positions where the star has to be there.
Started games in the National Football League last year. Yeah.
Coming up, we'll have half of the Elite Eight decided by the end of the night. Bishop and Friends on The Fan.
An ex-jock and a very puffy, smooth-faced man. These are the first voices you should hear. Morning Juice.
Your wake-up service.
Weekday mornings from 6 to 9.
The Atlas Butler Plumbing Services. Keeping things flowing. Like water through your pipes. And water down your drains.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And phone numbers through your brain. Call today.
Us.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by NBC4. Watch Columbus's number one name in morning news, NBC4, today.
Bishop and Friends, Chops and Eric Reeser with you today. Sweet 16, day one, tonight. First game up, you've got 6-seed Clemson versus 2-seed Arizona, 7:09. 5-seed San Diego State takes on 1-seed UConn in a rematch of the national championship last year. That's a 7:39 tip-off. 4, Alabama versus 1-seed North Carolina, 9:39. And your nightcap, 10:09 tip-off for 3-seeded Illinois versus 2-seeded Iowa State. Okay, so it's here. It's set. You heard that. That's all single-digit seeds in tonight's matchup, and I believe NC State is the only double-digit seed left in the entire tournament at 11. So I wanted to get the exact numbers on this. It is one of the lowest, the seventh lowest seed aggregate into the Sweet 16 of all time at just 53 this year. The lowest was a tie between 2009 and 2019 at 49. So, okay, 2019, that's not that long ago that we had a number that was even lower than this. The other numbers in front of 2024's 50 and then a 3 at 51. That's 1989, 82, 95, and 07. So except for that 2019 year, it feels like it's been at least a decade since we have seen any sort of seed this low. And also, as David Warlock pointed out here when he had the aggregate tweet earlier this week, 3 years ago in the bubble tournament, we had the highest number, 94. So is this a factor of there's too much chalk? Is the committee just getting it right? Or is it just random from year to year?
It's just the madness of the NCAA tournament. Like, San Diego State UConn is a rematch of the national championship game. Like, this is all just rant. This is the randomness of this tournament. This is where on one side you do get, I would say, and we have Baker reseed the Sweet 16. We'll do for higher or lower at 11 o'clock, but NC State's an 11 seed, but they haven't been playing like an 11 seed. It's just they use the totality of what they did in the regular season to put them there. They got the automatic qualifier from the ACC. Mm-hmm. This is all a random thing. Like, there was no telling with how much. Put this question out to the audience. How much Clemson basketball and y'all watch this season?
I've watched about
two games,
a half of Clemson. And it was this past weekend.
At most. And so I think this does showcase this is the beauty of it, right? Where you get these random occurrences that now put us into a position where everybody kind of gets what they wants with everybody gets what they want with this. Because you don't have it looks right on paper to not get any blowouts. There are going to be some duds. You have, what, 4 games tonight, 4 games tomorrow night. You're not going to get all competitive games through 8. You're going to get some blowouts. You're going to get some teams are going to get their asses kicked, but you're not going to be able to go back and say, well, they shouldn't have Cinderella in these because I don't see a Cinderella present.
No, but you still have you're right, Clemson, that's a team that was not a
Cinderella.
It was not a Cinderella, but also not on our radars this year. So a new team to see in there. NC State has been the exciting run through it, but they're still a Power 5 conference
ACC
team.
ACC tournament champs.
Is basketball out of the state of North Carolina any good? Yeah, so you don't have that, but you also don't have it being dragged down possibly by a bad game with a team that doesn't mean anything, which is what some people complain about with the Cinderellas. But you also still have all the high seeds, all the ones and twos made the Sweet 16 this year. So that also factors in, I would say, too, for people who did their bracket and are in bracket pools. They probably have a lot of people who feel decent about it, but that's because everybody feels decent about it because all the ones and twos are still alive, and that's who most people pick for their final fours.
Yeah, if you're an upset picker, this was not the year for you in your bracket challenges. And Reese, even you said, like, San Diego State, can they be a Cinderella because they were in the national title game last year?
No, they're not. Yeah. They're not considered Cinderella anymore. They're national runner-up.
It's funny. I was doing research at the beginning of after the first round because I was like, man, all the 1 and 2 seeds are still in this. 10 of the top 12 seeds are in the Sweet 16. When is the last time something like that happened? And I was shocked that like you said, Chops, 2019, because it seems like it's been a long time since we've had something like this.
Yeah, I can't remember the year. Maybe it was that 2019. But when I was looking for that stat just now, somebody said there was a year where relatively recently, 1, 2, and 3 seeds made it. I'm looking back to see if I can find that. I'll let you know if I find the exact date that happens. But it's not something that happens every year. And increasingly, we have seen 15s and 16s actually be somewhat competitive and pull off some of these upsets, especially the 15 over 2. That almost seemed like we were going to get one every other year or so. Now that's kind of the clip we're going on. Ohio State was the victim of one of those when they were a 2 seed and they fell to 15 seed Oral Roberts. As far as the games on the court tonight,
just a quick answer to your question. You said 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
I'm looking at 2019. You had North Carolina, Houston, Kentucky, Purdue, Tennessee, Virginia, Gonzaga, Texas Tech, Michigan, Florida State were the four out of the West. 1, 2, 3, and 4 out of the East. This is the closest I can find right now, just doing the quick.
Okay. So, I mean, that, there you're even extending out to four and that year. And that was the year that broke the record for the lowest aggregate seed total in the Sweet 16. I would say today, the two that I am going to prioritize watching are San Diego State, UConn, a rematch of the national title last year. Plus, UConn has looked like a juggernaut. But who knows? Maybe that one gets out of hand and I will check out Arizona Clemson. I mean, I'm going to be doing the two-screen situation. But which one am I going to keep the audio on in the second window? Illinois and Iowa State. I think I would pick, if I'm, you know, re-going through this, I don't know exactly what I picked in my bracket, but just these actual matchups, I would go chalk in those first three with Arizona, UConn, and North Carolina winning. But I think Illinois has a really good shot to beat Iowa State. Then they'd have a date with UConn later on, which would be a tough ask from them. But the way Terrence Shannon is playing, Dane Danger, the way he can get involved, I really like this Illinois team, and I think that they can beat Iowa State tonight for sure.
So let's check with our friends over at Tipico Sportsbook. They like the Cyclones by 1.5. They like the Tar Heels by 4.5. They like UConn by 11.5. And they like Arizona by 7.5 tonight against our friends over at Tipico Sportsbook.
I would say with those numbers, you feel like, yeah, UConn and Arizona, true favorites. The other numbers, especially the 1.5 for Iowa State, that's
coin flip.
Yeah, that's essentially just, we don't know who's going to win. It should be a good game, which is what I'm here for. I'm excited for that. Tomorrow we will have the conclusion of the Sweet 16, and then we're on to the Elite Eight. And by the time we come back on Monday, it'll be the Final Four. Yeah, it feels like, hey, I got all these games in front of me. We got 3 weeks
of this. After the first weekend, you snap your fingers and it's the spring game. Like every year, it feels like that.
What about you, Bake? You see any upsets coming tonight?
I mean, I'm hoping that San Diego State knocks off UConn. Personally,
yeah, I'm rooting for Alabama, and I'm rooting. No, I'm not rooting for Illinois. Go to hell, Illinois.
I've got Jaden Ledee in a player pool, and he's been really good so far. So I want him to continue. I want them to get a little revenge for last year, and then kind of set everybody else's brackets on fire. I have Houston winning in my bracket, so UConn losing would help me a lot compared to some people. So.
Yes, that would help me as well. I have Houston winning. You have Creighton in the Final Four or winning it all?
In the Final Four. I've got Alabama winning it all. So Roll Tide, baby. So,
yeah, you've got some real betting interest in that as far as, you know, getting ahead in the bracket.
Sure.
I questioned your Creighton pick because I remembered you at least had him in the Final Four. T-Bone has his posted, like, up on his desk.
Of course he does. I thought you were saying Tito.
No.
Like, Tito has a desk?
He has Creighton winning it all. I just walked in today and I could see the Creighton little C with the little blue jay on it. I could see that big logo on it. And I was like, wow, Creighton winning. I mean,
so I had my girlfriend do my bracket.
Oh, yes, I forgot.
She picked Alabama, so all the credit goes to her.
Alabama and Creighton, though, hey, that's still by. If you
still
get Alabama
right
and Creighton
now, brother.
Correct in the Final Four, all of a sudden you would jump up the leaderboard.
You get points. That's what I'm here for.
You've got to tell the girlfriend, any team that Ohio State beat this year cannot win the national championship.
What do you mean? The Crimson Tide is still alive, baby.
And then, if they win the national championship through the transitive property, Ohio State's kind of national champions. We can go with that. Right?
We get that with Purdue, too.
Boom. We've got two chances to win the national championship. Coming up, should we be able to make prop bets on college players? Bishop and Friends on the Fan.
A lot of hosts have been on our airways in the past 30 years. Some good, some bad, some really bad. Anyway, sorry for that. The Fan.
Atlas Butler Plumbing Services. Keeping things flowing. Like water through your pipes. And water down your drains.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And phone numbers through your brain. Call today.
Not interested in Iowa football? Too bad. Shops will tell you about it anyway. This is Bishop and Friends.
Reeser, the MIT kids did find some information on the chalkiest year that we possibly have ever had in the NCAA tournament.
Well, I don't know if it's the chalkiest year ever, but the most recent year that produced chalk, Virginia won the national championship. So it was back in 2019. They were the one seed in the South, and in the Cavaliers region, they played Oregon, the 12 seed, to get to the Elite Eight. The two and the three played Purdue and Tennessee. So Oregon would have been the lowest seed in the regional semifinals that year. In the Midwest, the five, Auburn, played North Carolina, but Houston and Kentucky were 2 or 3 and 2 respectively. And then it was 1-4 in the West with Gonzaga, Florida State, Michigan, Texas Tech, and then 1-4 in the East.
So that, yes, but then, you know, the disparity of the years, it's not something that like has happened modern, because as I was looking through it, looking at some of these stats too, found a tweet from an AP writer last year that Texas was the only team seeded number one or two still alive headed into the Sweet 16. So last year we only had one or two seed, and this year we have all eight of them.
I'm going to say this till they put me in the ground, and that could happen sooner rather than later. This is a good tournament that doesn't need changed.
And that madness is maybe why you shouldn't gamble on it. Well, if Charlie Baker, the president of the NCAA, got his way, and this is something that has already been enacted in Ohio, there are no prop bets on college players. You can bet on the outcomes of games, but as far as over under points, over under three pointers made, even down to award type futures, you cannot bet on it legally here in Ohio. Obviously, people have their ways around betting on all sorts of things right now, but Charlie Baker released a statement yesterday. Sports betting issues are on the rise across the country, with prop bets continuing to threaten the integrity and compensation and leading to student athletes and professional athletes getting harassed. The NCAA has been working with states to deal with these threats, and many are responding by banning college prop bets. He continues, "This week we will be contacting officials across the country in states that still allow these bets and ask them to join Ohio, Vermont, Maryland, and many others and remove college prop bets from all betting markets. The NCAA is drawing the line on sports betting to protect student athletes and to protect the integrity of the game. Issues across the country these last several days show there is more work to be done." Well, they're talking about maybe a little bit the Shohei Ohtani, but definitely the Jonte Porter news in the NBA, where some peculiar bets placed on games that he left early, and so the unders were very much secured for him in the process, and the NBA is, and the betting organizations are looking into that. So make no mistake that those are linked, that he feels, that Charlie Baker feels this is the time to try to hit that and throw this out there. The NCAA at their most visible point at any point in the year with the tournament going on, and then you get this happening in the NBA, possibly, you know, some fishy stuff going on with prop bets there. College players, are they more accessible because they're on campus? Can people go and find them and figure out ways to maybe do that? And then also the what we were talking about with JB Bickerstaff last week, the idea that people are getting threats in, on social media. Are they getting your any sort of other personal information and extending those threats? The microcosm of the college world is a lot smaller. Finding a kid in a college town, probably pretty easy compared to finding a professional athlete. So I do understand the concern, but I also worry that this is just one of the last grasping straws at amateurism, that you can't bet on student athletes because they're still amateurs, and we can't have that in our ecosystem. So while I think the idea might actually carry some water and be a good thing for college athletes overall, I fear that the NCAA is doing it only to protect what is theirs, because, oh, if it's different, you can bet props on pro players, but you can't bet on college players, oh, because they're amateurs, and thus giving them one more protection to the amateurism model that has been cracked away at over the years and seems to be on its last, you know, its last bit of life.
I guess this is where, for once, you're going to be a little bit more cynical than I am, because yeah. I do look at this and see this is a way to protect these guys, because you've got, you know, players for Gonzaga who are now going to be, if they can make it to Phoenix, are going to be thrust into bigger markets. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, they go from smaller college towns into these big cities for these massive tournaments, and there's a chance that they could be exposed to seedier individuals. So I do think that this is a good thing for college kids, who they're more out there because they put themselves out there more. They're more active on social media than professional athletes. They, with name, image, and likeness deals, some of the bigger players, you know, I can't imagine what Caitlin Clark's direct messages look like.
I'm sure they're closed at this point.
So I would hope so. But with all of the exposure that these players have and are allowed to have, and the ability for someone in any corner of the country, and then if they want to go to the Final Four, the national championship game, and to have that, you know, to be even closer to some of these players, I do think it's a good thing to do what you can to protect them with something that they shouldn't have to be burdened with.
Yeah, I know, and I would agree with you on that like this is probably the right thing for college athletes, because that's a huge transition already to go from high school to you're on your own for the first time, you're playing college ball, more eyes are on you, more people care about the outcomes of these games. And so you're right that the intention of the NCAA actually doesn't really matter if it does result in something that is good for the players.
Whatever they really want behind this, it's if they're doing it to protect their I hate this phrase, student athletes, then it's fine. Then I'm fine with it.
Because it actually does protect the athletes in general. Whatever, if they want to keep trying to push student athlete, if it does help the actual athlete idea, then yeah, it's probably a worthwhile thing.
Why don't, if their main concern is people going after these athletes, why don't we go after these keyboard cowboys instead of taking stuff away from people that are actually doing stuff legitimately or for fun or for good, you know? Like, why don't we go after these people making these threats or saying stupid things? Like, you're right. You have whatever right you want to go on social media and say what you want, but there are consequences sometimes. And if you're dumb enough to say something stupid to an athlete because your prop bet didn't hit, all right, you can go spend a night in the slammer or something.
I agree, but it's easier to do it the way they're going about it than to have to police Twitter or Instagram or the social media platforms, already tough enough to police. So to find these individuals, like to find Buckeye fan 42069 who yelled at Felix Okpara because maybe he didn't get that extra rebound back in January against Michigan when he had the over under on how many rebounds for Felix Okpara. Like, that's almost impossible to have to, not impossible, but it's much more difficult to have to go find that singular person or the guy that threatened JB Bickerstaff to go and talk to law enforcement or to have law enforcement agencies coordinate and find him. I agree. If you're doing that online, jail.
I think the policing the social media, would just be so hard because there's so many numbers.
Talk to Elon about that.
I do think that the NCAA could possibly get to a point. I mean, these are their tournament games. You see all the signage around it. This, they are in charge of this. They could hold some sort of zero tolerance policy if you yell at a player in the game live there.
And that's something that you could do. But I think this is, they're thinking this nips that in the bud.
Yeah. And it's not like it's not something that hasn't happened. So, you know, as I mentioned, Ohio is a place where you can't do college prop bets. So they have some evidence that it is something that they're already going against. And I think you're right. Overall, it would be a healthier environment for the college athlete. And so while we still can't question the NCAA, if they're doing something that helps the athlete, we can probably just let
it go.
You're
okay with it at this point.
Because it doesn't matter what their actual intention is. They're going to fail because they're the NCAA. They fail at everything.
There's a lot they can't. There's the one thing they do right is this dumb basketball tournament we're all enamored with.
Up next, we could have another instance of the rich getting richer in college football. Bishop and Friends on The Fan.
Matty Ice has a large tattoo on his calf of LeBron eating a lion. I have nothing else to say. Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan.
Atlas Butler Plumbing Services. Keeping things flowing. Like water through your pipes. And water down your drains.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And phone numbers through your brain. Call today.
Today.
Taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Chops and Eric Reeser, Oops All Friends edition. Getting into some of the news in college football in just a second, but it is opening day, as you heard in the update. We talked about that off the top of the show. I just saw this stat from The Athletic. Could winning 100 games in baseball be overrated? In the World Series era, the Braves have won 100 games 8 times, and the Dodgers have won 100 games 11 times. They have a combined 0 World Series victories in those seasons, 0-19. I would say the pushback to that is, especially like in recent memory, both of those teams have won a World Series, so they're doing something right.
Yeah, it was interesting. I'm reading people's predictions for this season. They were talking about the Phillies and the Braves and how, right, like the Braves in the regular season have done so much better recently, but I think it was the Phillies that were able to knock them out last season. It's like Atlanta's going to have to manage how they go about it in the end of the season in terms of like they're, you know, managing their roster so they don't get either tired or injured or collapse late. And I was like, okay, how?
This is one of those stats that I think is just being attributed incorrectly, that the Braves and the Dodgers have spent a lot of money, had a lot of good baseball teams over the years, and have found ways to win 100 games. But winning 100 games doesn't guarantee that you're going to win the World Series, but it does put you in a position to win your division a bunch, maybe even win a World
just
Series.
Just like spending, just like your payrolls. Like, it's you have a better chance of getting more, you know, more swings at a postseason run the more you spend on your payroll. Does it automatically guarantee you you're going to win a World Series? No. You've got the Tampa Bay Rays that have been successful recently. You've got the Baltimore Orioles that are projected by many to win the American League at the very least. And it's like, no, it's not every single year the highest payroll wins. We obviously see that with the Dodgers and with the Yankees. But it gets you up to bat more.
Yes, for to use a baseball term.
Success. Right. Puns intended here.
Yeah, so no, I do not think that you should be worried that your team won 100 games and they have no shot. If your team won 100 games, it means they're doing something
it's
right.
It's the most Twitter era conversation you can have. Is really? Winning 100 games bad for your baseball team?
I don't know. No team that's ever won 16 NFL games in a regular season has ever won the Super Bowl. Maybe we shouldn't go 16-1.
8-2-1-9-7-10. We're not taking your calls. Should the Guardians and Reds try to win 100 games this year?
My answer is yes, you should try. Like,
it's what, asinine.
Like, what do you, yeah, at that point, what do? You go, well, we'll have to lose this game because we can't get to 100.
Oh, we didn't win 100. Why even play?
What do you mean try for the Reds? 162-0, right?
Hell yeah, well, brother. That's still on the table for every team but the Dodgers and Padres.
I can't wait if they lose tonight and then you have to come in, or this afternoon, you have to come in tomorrow and say 161-1.
You shut your mouth. That's what I'll be doing. To me.
Look, the Dodgers, Dodgers are 500. You know, is that a problem? You spend $700 million on one player, so maybe you shouldn't spend money on players. You're only 500, only a 500 baseball club.
I saw this from Ross Dellinger, who is just on the money with everything that's going on. I don't know how many contacts he has or how many texts he get
all of them
in any day, but once a week he drops something that's like, oh, this is big news that could be something, and he has all the inside information on it. So this one is the NCAA Football Oversight Committee introduced a legislative proposal this month that would expand the abilities of a football support staff, permitting all staff members to provide players skill and tactical coaching instruction. That means on-field coaching. That's what they mean by that. Both during practice and games. The proposal, introduced for a second straight year after failing to get approval last spring, eliminates the policy limiting coaching instruction to only the NCAA's maximum of 11 countable coaches. That's the 10 assistants and head coach. Ohio State right now only has 9 assistants because they're still looking for a running back coach, but they want to get to that 10 assistants plus the head coach and Ryan Day. The proposal strictly maintains that the number of off-campus recruiters to 11, but gives flexibility to head coaches to potentially designate any 10 staff members as countable coaches who are eligible to recruit off campus. If the proposal is adopted, it will take effect either in time for summer training or the start of fall camp, said Craig Bull, the executive director of the American Football Coaches Association. The AFCA endorses the proposal 100%, said Bull, who sits on the oversight committee. Bull told Yahoo Sports, quote, "This is probably the most common sense approach that we could make. For years, we've had analysts and quality control coaches who have had a desire to coach. So much has changed with the landscape, with players now being compensated. To be concerned that you're going to have an assistant quarterback's coach out there coaching is counterproductive. It's been a compliance nightmare." So you can hear that's from the people who want it. And I can hear your argument there, but this really just sounds like an ability for Bama has done this a lot, but we've seen quality control coaches come through Ohio State, and it's usually the idea of the car wash, one-stop shop, and then you can get back into coaching the next year. Bama has really done that, bringing in guys as analyst-type roles, then even sometimes bringing in guys as their offensive coordinator or whatever position to then get another job elsewhere. And now you're telling me that you could essentially balloon that to whatever you need it to be and pay those guys? That just sounds like the consolidation of power at the top. The teams that have the most money,
yeah,
saying now we can just have the most instruction and guys aren't going to be stretched as thin. And it really just feels like a rich getting richer scenario that we already have problems with in college football.
Because Ohio State can afford to have 50 coaches on its staff.
If it wants.
Rutgers cannot afford to have 50 coaches on their staff.
No. And then on top of that, like, imagine how many more coaches could Ohio University add to
zero,
their staff?
Zero more coaches they right. can add to their staff.
They how already, many analysts they already, do they hire per
zero.
Year?
Zero. They already operate close enough to the red where it's just not feasible. And they are with a larger population of college football that operates so close to that margin where you couldn't add any more coaches to the staff. And even some places have coaches doing multiple things. It's in few places, like the Ohio States, like the Alabamas, like the Michigans, that can bring on guys in support roles, that can have video analysts, that can have all of these things. If it was a video analyst in like the MAC, they're doing other things, or they've got another title that's not part of their, they've just got so many other jobs they're doing.
Now, here's the counterpoint from Hugh Freeze, head coach at Auburn. Great guy, so it's a good thing you got him on your side. He believes that most teams at the major conference level will employ a second assistant at each position group and a separate coach for special teams. Quote, you can have too many. I don't want 40 coaches, he told Yahoo Sports. Continuing, we need more people than ever to try to hold our teams together. We need the bodies to help capture our kids and culture and manage the 85-man roster. At some point, we're limiting their growth. Oh, won't somebody think of the kids?
Yeah. That
11 coaches who can do on-field stuff is not quite
enough.
Think
of the children.
They all have their own position coach. They need an assistant position coach. My question is, though, once you open it up to that, okay, yeah, I agree. There's probably a law of diminishing returns. 40 coaches would be too many. But if you double the amount of coaches and you have 20 assistants in your head coach, that's going to make you a better team. And like we said, that's not something everybody's going to be able to afford. And if you have to start revenue sharing with the players, which I believe is a matter of when, not if, at this point, then it just becomes another scenario where the teams with all the money can have more advantages. So, no, I don't like this rule. I like that the coaches have to play that little bit of chess game with it to figure out who are we actually going to use as our assistants. We talked about this earlier this week. Deion Sanders didn't like the way his offensive coordinator was playing. Yanked him, put him in one of those quality controller analyst roles, took somebody who was an analyst for them, and made him the on-field coach. So you can still make those changes.
Not just anybody. He took Pat Shurmur.
Oh. But
he took a bright star in the college football coaching field and replaced him with Pat Shurmur.
Because?
Took Sean Lewis, who many think
he did the car wash for himself.
One of the better offensive minds right now in college football, a guy who's on the rise, and flipped him for Pat Shurmur.
Because things weren't working out. It's because Colorado just really wasn't
Colorado
that good.
Stunk.
They were exciting at the beginning of the year, but it turns out they really weren't that good. And I don't think the amount of coaches that they would have had would have made the difference. But when you're talking about all the talent, that's where Hugh Freeze is kind of right. Yes, there is a how do you manage all this talent and make sure that development is right? If you add more coaches, you could do that. But when you're already these schools that have more talent than everybody, can't you just deal with that part of it?
So this proposal that we're talking about, it didn't get approved last spring. So they're just going to try to jam it through again.
Basically.
So I could see it failing again, where they try to make this a thing.
But are they ever going to stop trying to do it?
No, they'll just keep trying. And it's like you said, it's a select few that want this to happen when it's the majority of college football coaches, especially at this point in the year. Like, we've got other stuff to focus on.
Well, that's the interesting aspect of it, too, because the stipulation is, okay, the people who you classify as your actual coaches, they're the only ones who can still go out there and recruit. That group of 11 is the only one who can leave campus and recruit. Well, wait, why couldn't you just hire a bunch of analysts to coach in week, coach a bunch of the practices, make those roles that, and have a group of recruiters that's their only job, and you can have that. There was a pushback from that. I think it was from this poll guy, but it was somebody in the article saying that, well, no, because in recruiting, a lot of players want to play for the coach that is recruiting them.
They don't want, like, the coach's nephew.
I don't think it's going to
there because he's wearing an Ohio State quarter zip being like, hey, you should come play for my uncle.
I don't think it's going to stop somebody from trying, and maybe not do all 11, but maybe have two guys who are coaches, but really their entire job is just recruiting. And then you just supplant them with analysts and quality control guys that you can now have do on field coaching, both in practice and in games. I think that's probably the advantage that they see there is, it's too much on the plate to ask somebody to be a full-time position coach and a full-time recruiter. So how can we split those up? And again, the schools like Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, they're going to be the ones that can afford this more than anything. So this is one of those instances where it would be good for Ohio State, but I don't want it. I think it's bad for college football.
Overall, yeah. And look, as long as there are coaches, they're going to be coaches that try to game the system. They're going to try to find any advantage that they possibly can and exploit it. And that's not something we're going to get away with. That's something we're ever going to get away from. And this just feels silly.
Baker, you're closer to teams and coaches at the high school level. How do you think they would respond to the coach coming in isn't really the position coach?
No, you want that. You want Ryan Day. You want Jim Knowles doing that.
Yeah, I think like that's one of the cool things. Like just this past weekend, being at the basketball tournament, seeing Jake Diebler there and seeing John Diebler there, like that created a buzz. Seeing Izzo come down to watch one of his recruits and sit in the student section with the recruit's parents and family. I think that they want the big names showing up, you know, and maybe some of these coaches will be big names, you know, if they're recruiting people. I remember Ohio State back in the 90s when Cooper was here had Bill Conley, who was their recruiting coordinator. And he was, you know, if you ever met him, you would want to run through a wall for that guy. Like, there was no doubt why they were getting extremely good talent was because Bill Conley was a guy that just ingratiated people, you know. But I guess it just depends on the coach, but for the most part, you want to see a Ryan Day come into your school because you have a quarterback that he wants.
Also, just real quick, I wonder if it's the push for this to pass is coming from coaches who just don't want to recruit. And so they're using this as a workaround.
And then we can give somebody else the recruit.
Somebody else can go do that.
Well, that's the idea. Could you just hire somebody who's basically just a really good salesman? Yes. Call him a coach. He's the one who gets to go out on the road.
Okay, he's our recruiting coordinator. He's our assistant coach in charge of recruiting. You give him the title, and it fits within the parameters of this piece of legislation if it were to pass.
That would be the thing to really watch, because a lot of times in head coaching contracts now, they put in the what the number is going to be for his assistant coaching salary pool and how much it increases each year. Well, is that going to be something where that number needs to start getting split up between here's your quality control salary pool, here's your assistant coaching salary pool, and which direction are those numbers going to go? Who do they want to pay more as that time goes on? My hunch, though, would be still the coaches who are the recruiters, because recruiting's the true lifeblood. And yeah, on-field coaching, very important, but they want the best players as much as they can get them. Conference realignment, it's not just going to affect conference schedules. Next on Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
We have so many local shows, I can't fit them in a 10-second promo. So let's just say we're live and local all damn day.
Atlas Butler Plumbing Services. Keeping things flowing. Like water through your pipes and water down your drains.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And phone numbers through your brain. Call today.
Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast. Or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
More like opening yay with Tipico's new rewards. You'll get up to 5% cash back on every qualifying bet. Enjoy the highest cash back in the industry with the most rewarding sports book. Claim Tipico's new sign-up bonus now. Get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Sign up now. Enter the promo code THEFAN100 to get that bonus. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app to bet, earn, and win today. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is from a few days ago, actually, March 24th to be exact. But research, do you like the idea of seeing an old stadium reduced to rubble? Because I got a picture here of Ryan Field, where Northwestern plays, and they have begun the deconstruction process.
You know my thoughts on a historic building locally that could use a similar renovate and remodel.
If Reaser was in charge, the renovation would be headed by a wrecking ball.
Well, actually, I would just ask Top Gun Ted, see if we get some ordnance dropped and make a whole show of it.
Oh, yeah. Just have some jets come by.
Have the connections.
Drop a firebomb right there at the 50-yard line.
Do whatever you can to make sure. Well, you know, you probably want something that doesn't explode right on impact, but I'm sure they have the technology to just fire rocks into the thing to just collapse it safely.
Just drop some rocks from is that what fighter jets
ordnance
do now?
I don't know. But look, if he can get a missile through like a basketball-sized hole in the wall.
Right.
What was the country he was doing? The Kosovo?
Yeah.
Well, he can get something done to safely demolish the horseshoe.
If you had
so that
seen
something better can be rebuilt. If you had seen
Top Gun Maverick, you would know that the plot of that movie is to get something into a very tight hole and blow up a very specific building.
Why do I need to see it? I just said the plot.
I guess. Yeah.
Spoiler alert. They get it done.
You don't know that for sure.
USA.
Okay. So we talked about this briefly yesterday because I saw that Wisconsin had announced a home and home in 2029 and 2030 against Cal. That game is taking the place of their originally planned home and home with UCLA. Now a conference opponent. Okay, that one makes sense, but we've lamented all offseason long how bad Ohio State's out of conference schedule is this coming year. Right now the Big Ten only plays three. The SEC plays four, even with the expanded membership that they are going to have when Texas and Oklahoma join this year. And what is that going to do to these schedules? How, with the teams really prioritizing, the leagues especially, wanting to get as many possible teams into the college football playoff, it does not seem like we have fostered the environment where they want to play these tough games. As they silo themselves and consolidate power into, especially the SEC and the Big Ten, how interested are these teams going to be in playing with each other? Well, we had a comment earlier this week from Ole Miss AD Keith Carter, quote, "There are some matchups we have on the books that may not be around in the future. We may have some announcements coming shortly." Then friend of the program, Antonio Morales, he covers USC out in Los Angeles. He says, looks like USC Ole Miss home and home series might not happen. So he's, you know, he's connecting those dots and trying to find the reports, but maybe that announcement comes soon. Why would Ole Miss and USC cancel a home and home? I can't see any other reason besides we don't want to play the Big Ten and give them those opportunities.
Well, it would be a thing to where they would want to make their non-conference not as easy as possible, but not to put themselves in a position where they could lose a game early. And then you get into the conference slate, and then you use that as the jumping off point into the college football playoff.
Because if you have an easy out-of-conference schedule or a more manageable one, I'm not saying they're going to just completely just throw it away. But, hey, USC, a program that looks like they're on the rise with Lincoln Riley. Ole Miss, hey, if you can have an easier one, go 4-0. All you have to do is go 500 in the SEC, and you're looking at an 8-4 season. And it feels like the SEC is going to be really clamoring for 9-3 type teams. So if you find a way to just sneak one more win, you're going to be a team that they're going to be lobbying for that probably would be highly ranked because of the way the committee has approached the SEC. And that's what I think this is about. So conference realignment, not just changing your conference schedules. I think it's going to be a detriment to our out of conference schedules, which are already
stank,
barren, and terrible.
And I hope this isn't the case. Like, I don't know exactly who with USC or Ole Miss would put the kibosh on it, who would initiate kibosh talks, but it did have me thinking about home and homes for Ohio State. They've got Texas scheduled 25-26, Alabama 27-28, Georgia 30-31. Don't forget Boston College 35-36.
Because remember when that came out and it was like, hey, maybe Halfley would still be there. What, he coached here 1 year.
Maybe Bill O'Brien will still be there.
It would have been
no chance.
It would have been like almost 10 years since. No, it would have been almost like 15 years since Jeff Halfley coached at Ohio State, and now he's not even there anyways.
I hope these games still happen, but I pause in the idea that they will. Like, it doesn't feel like it feels to me like the SEC's ducking a little bit.
And this doesn't make any sense. Like, forever we've heard maybe Ohio State wouldn't want to play a Texas or an Alabama or a Georgia because then they have no room for error in their conference schedule to make it into. But now with an expanded playoff, we've got 12. We already know it's going to end up at 16. It should make it easier for you to play these games because a loss won't hurt you as bad. This just makes no sense. Like, why wouldn't you play these games and get all the money that you can?
Because like I said, it won't hurt your top teams too bad. You're right. Ohio State goes and loses a September game to Texas and then still wins most of their, you know, the remaining schedule, goes 10-2, 11-1, something like that. And obviously it's out of conference. You could still win the Big Ten. But a loss like that for a team like Wisconsin or a team like Ole Miss, that's where it starts to become detrimental because they might just be on the edge. Hey, a top 15 team. Okay, a top 15 team. But if you have an extra loss, that's more like 15 and not like 12 that could possibly get into the tournament. And that's how the conferences are going to try to sell themselves on it. We still don't have a ton of evidence that it's the Big Ten trying to do this. It sounds like right now that Ole Miss initiated these with their athletic director being the one that's going out there.
He's the only one that's commented on schedule changes as of this point.
But we don't know for sure that it wasn't USC who came out, and that's why he's saying it. But I think that I think both of them, as they see, okay, we're the two top leagues. We don't need to play each other in out-of-conference schedule. We'll play each other in the playoff because we're going to have most of our teams in the playoff.
And there's more money in the playoff. There's already there's going to be, so you're right. There's, when you say these big home and homes and you say the teams involved in these matchups, there's going to be a lot of money in those, but there's more money for the schools and for the conferences in the college football playoffs. So you do less, you do whatever you can to protect as many spots as you can until Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti come together and give auto bids. 4 or 5 for each conference.
And then it wouldn't matter. Then it's all your conference standings anyways.
Then it doesn't matter, but that's just where my head went after just...
Are they trying to hold the out-of-conference hostage to get their way on something else? It's always so nefarious, isn't it?
It's always agenda setting.
Paul Feinbaum joins us next. We'll ask him about some of this stuff. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you're starting your day any other way, you're doing it wrong. Morning Juice with Bobby and Beamer.
Weekdays starting at 6.
Atlas Butler Plumbing Services. Keeping things flowing. Like water through your pipes. And water down your drains.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And phone numbers through your brain. Call today.
Drink recommendations, movie reviews, sports discussion, and whatever the hell Reeser does. This is Bishop and Friends.
What we also do on this show, on Thursdays at 10:30, we talk to Paul Feinbaum on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Paul Feinbaum, host of the Paul Feinbaum Show, SEC Network, ESPN, Sirius XM. You've heard him everywhere. Paul, right before we had you jump on the hotline here, we were talking about the comment from Ole Miss Athletic Director Keith Carter saying that there are some matchups that we have on the books that might not be around in the future, and that partnered with a report from somebody out in who works at the Los Angeles Times saying looks like USC Ole Miss home and home series might not happen. Are we going to see a lower amount of marquee out-of-conference games because they're going to want their win record to look better at the end of the year to prioritize getting teams in to the conference tournament? Because those are the dots I connected.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting that happened, because most until recently had been thinking it would be easier to take a shot at a game like that. But what's interesting about the SEC right now, which is contradictory to what Ole Miss and SC are apparently doing, is that they're staying at eight conference games, even though a year ago it was more likely they're going to 9. There's a couple of reasons for it. With the addition of Oklahoma and Texas, there was a thought that they would get more money from ESPN, which hasn't come yet. And quite frankly, about half the schools in this league down here don't want extra games because it causes them difficulty in getting to a bowl game. But I know I didn't completely answer your question, because I don't think we know yet. I think after the first playoff, it will become a little bit easier to figure out.
Paul, it does feel like, you know, since some schools, I know Ohio State's got home and home scheduled through 2031 with SEC schools. I think it got Georgia, Alabama, Texas are on the schedule for the Buckeyes. Does it feel like once they kind of come out of this first 12-team playoff and reassess everything, would it be more of a let's schedule one-offs at neutral site fields at the beginning of the season, or would you expect them to keep the home and homes over that model?
I think the home and homes are here to stay. I hear from coaches and athletic directors in the SEC primarily that they are sick of the neutral site games. So really for about 20 years now, there's been a game in Atlanta, a game now in Orlando, Dallas, Houston. And having gone to a number of these, I find them incredibly boring. I was at a Florida-Michigan game a couple of years ago in Jerry's World, and like, who cared? I mean, there were fans there, but there was no local interest. When you have a game in Atlanta this year, Clemson and Georgia, there's a lot of interest because both schools are drivable. But I think these things are going. People love the home and home. I was in Austin, Texas on Monday, and they were still talking about the game there a couple of years ago between Texas and LSU. This year, as you guys know, Texas is going to Michigan. That's a place nobody in the South has probably ever been to. Most of the listeners that we have never been to a game in Columbus. Fans want that, and I think the athletic directors are going to go to that eventually.
Paul, we were talking about the proposal to allow more of the quality control and analyst type positions to also do on-field instruction with the players, both at practice and in games, but still keep it to only the head coach and the 10 assistants can be the ones who are recruiting. Do you see that as something that the bigger schools would just take advantage of and just say, okay, these guys are the coaches, but they're really full-time recruiters, and this analyst, even though we call him an analyst, he's really the linebacker coach?
Yeah, I mean, what's going on at the major schools is really remarkable, because there are so many different analysts that I wonder really what the coaches on the field do. Because if you go back 20, 30, 40 years, I mean, they had to literally wait to get the film. I mean, they'd have to go down to a bus station and get the film back in the day and then break it down. No, there's not a coach on any of the major staffs that do that. It's already broken down for them. It's isolated. And now with the computer. So I think it really doesn't matter whether you have 9, 10, 11. The coaches on the field are primarily recruiters, and they make in-game decisions. But the analyst room would blow the average fan away. How many people are going? I saw something the other day that I believe, at South Carolina, Mike Shula was hired as an analyst. I realize that's a name that most people don't really know. He was the head coach at Alabama before Nick Saban 18 years ago. Now this guy is sitting in a cubicle trying to help Shane Beamer save his career. I mean, it is remarkable what has happened here. I blame Nick Saban in many ways, because he really created it when he started hiring a bunch of fired coaches to hang out. And now not everyone does it, because everyone can't afford to do it. But it is clearly, Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, I would say schools like that have more coaches than an NFL franchise.
Paul Finebaum, our guest, find him everywhere. Paul, we talked with an NFL guy about this yesterday, and he had pointed to NIL as the primary driver behind more and more people talking about pulling an Eli. Did you agree with that being the case with NIL and with staying in college instead of going to the NFL? And what did you make of Deion saying that about Travis Hunter and his son?
Well, I think it really depends. Nowadays, any college player can get an assessment. It's a guess, but it's still an assessment of what he would do in the NFL draft. So I have a hard time believing that there are many schools that could be in the same neighborhood as, I mean, if the player's that good to keep him from going to the NFL. I'm somewhat immune from anything that Deion says these days, but I would go to the NFL. First of all, you're getting better training, you're getting better competition, and you're also getting that transitional year out of the way, as opposed to wasting another year in Colorado where you're going to try to get to a bowl game. You could be playing at one of 32 franchises. Probably the only exception would be maybe the Carolina Panthers, where you might digress. I think Bryce Young probably regretted coming out when he did.
Paul, we got the news this week. Joel Klatt actually dropped it on his show that the Ohio State spring game and the Michigan spring game are going to be on Big Boy Fox. So this is a little bit of a two-parter. Is there enough interest in the spring game that this is going to be worth it to use the network time programming? And are we close to the SEC and ESPN saying Bama's spring game is now on ABC and Kirk and Chris Fowler are going to call it?
I think we are. And there's a big reason for it. First of all, they draw ratings. I'm trying to remember some of the games I've seen, Georgia, Alabama in the past on ESPN. I mean, we're looking at probably a million viewers. And Saturday afternoon, even on ABC, is a wasteland. You're probably going to start getting more NBA games, but it's still not a very good time slot. And one thing that I do know, working at the SEC Network, everything you hear now about the transition, and remember, this is the first year CBS is gone and the SEC is entirely on ESPN, is you hear the name ABC mentioned all the time, where years ago that sounded like a quantum leap. It's really not anymore. I mean, check the grid for this Sunday. I mean, you have two women's games on ABC as opposed to ESPN.
Paul, this isn't going to be football. This is actually going to be college basketball related, but was Caitlin Clark right when she said that, or at least I'm paraphrasing her words, that she's the biggest star in college hoops?
I think she is. And I don't know if it has as much to do with the fact that, that she is great and she is. It's the fact that, that men's college basketball is so pedestrian. And listen, I know that Purdue has a monster player that, that everyone knows, but he's not a household word. And by the way, you're not the additional tune in to see him this weekend, whether it's tomorrow night or Sunday is nothing compared to Caitlin. And I think the media's helped create it. But that's part of what the media does. They turn people into superstars. You have to be good. I'm excited about Caitlin's next game, and I think if we end up seeing her against LSU, I believe the game would be Monday. I mean, it's going to be a gargantuan. Is there a single college basketball game over the next two nights that the entire country is waiting for? This isn't 5 or 6 years ago with Zion Williamson or other years when there was a singular player. I mean, I don't think there really are any stars in college basketball in terms of, one from New York to L.A.
No, it's a hard sport to make the stars out of right now. Paul, thanks for joining us the last couple of weeks, but we'll be back next week, so you'll get rid of us for at least a little bit.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul.
He's Paul Feinbaum, host of the Paul Feinbaum Show, SEC Network, ESPN, Sirius XM, on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. There might be more reviews coming to the NFL. That and more in Thing or Not a Thing next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
We have so many local shows, I can't fit them in a 10-second promo. So let's just say we're live and local all damn day. The Fan.
Atlas Butler Plumbing Services. Keeping things flowing. Like water through your pipes and water down your drains.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And phone numbers through your brain. Call today.
Distilled sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Chaps, Reeser, Ryan Baker. Time for Thing or Not a Thing.
Thing or Not a Thing.
Sponsored by Apex Plumbing Pros.
What do we got?
All right, guys. So one thing from the NFL league meetings this week that we haven't really talked about, they authorized a significant expansion to the league's replay assist program. This coming from ESPN, 3 penalty categories, intentional grounding, roughing the passer, and hits out of bounds were all added to the list of plays replay assist can advise officials on. The NFL will now allow replay officials to move into the area of penalty enforcement for the first time. They will not be allowed to initiate a formal review on intentional grounding, roughing the passer, or hits out of bounds, nor can they suggest a flag be thrown, but they will be authorized to suggest a real-time reversal of a penalty on specific objective aspects of a play when clear and obvious video evidence is present, according to the rule. Previously, replay officials advised officials on calls such as catch, no catch, possession, and down by contact, advice that on-field referees can't accept or reject. Thing or not a thing?
I think there's a few things with this. One, okay, they're the ones who can't initiate a formal review, but I think we've already seen this. College basketball is like the best example of it, that now that more things are reviewable, sometimes the refs, especially at the end of the game, when they go to the monitor to see how much time is left or who touched it last, they almost defer to that rather than even making a call on the court. There are times where refs seemingly just go, we'll take a look at it. And it's like, no, what was the, at least have a live call. So I think that the fact that now they can go to this isn't officially the sky judge, but it's along that long of ideas that they can go and say, hey, let's get the guy who could actually see the angle of whether or not he landed with his full body weight on the quarterback, or was the quarterback outside of the tackle box? I couldn't quite see. I'll call it intentional grounding, but we'll go take a look at it and see what they saw from the camera angle. So I think it will just result in more reviews overall. But how much will they actually accept or reject what the quote-unquote sky judge says to them? Because we dealt with this the 1 year where they allowed pass interference to be reviewable, and the refs almost never went away from what was called on the field. Whether, and it was on both sides. If it was called, if no call, they would stick with it. If it was called pass interference, they would stick with it. Because refs don't go against other refs.
Right. And so that was when I read this. That's where my head went. It's like they're not going to go against the call that they made on the field because they're not going to lessen their importance. Like if they're constantly being checked in these game, like in tight game situations, the last 2 minutes of a half or last 30 seconds of an actual game, and you're constantly stepping over the officials, that just they're bad. Like the NFL officiating stinks, but
all officiating stinks now.
That's true, but they can't. I don't think they will show themselves to be any more useless than we already kind of think that they are.
Ice Cube's Big Three has made a historic offer to Caitlin Clark. TMZ is reporting that the number is $5 million. Ice Cube responding to this: "We intended the offer to remain private while Caitlin Clark plays for the championship, but I won't deny what's now already out there. Big Three made a historic offer to Caitlin Clark, and why wouldn't we? Caitlin is a generational athlete who can achieve tremendous success in the Big Three. Thing or not a thing?"
Well, I'm aware of the Big Three, but a little unfamiliar. I had to refresh myself, like, what exactly are the rules and everything? It is 3-on-3. That's why it's called Big Three. But outside of that, what else is there? So 3-on-3, the court's spread out a little bit more. But this is not a women's league that they are creating for the Big Three. This would be Caitlin Clark playing against the men with her shooting prowess, less people on the court. They have that 4-point circle. I would think she would be able to get some shots off, but it would be fascinating to see, yeah, how she would compare and what her game would look like playing against men out on the court, because I have not seen any reporting that this is not for the Big Three league that is a men's league so far. But they, Ice Cube also talked about how they've had women coaches come in and be successful, win some of their championships. And for Caitlin Clark, as if she can get clearance from the WNBA, it's $5 million on a possible 10-week. It's like an 8-week regular season and some playoff weekends. So $5 million over 10 weeks, yeah, that's something you got to do if you can get away with it. The WNBA was reached out to by ESPN and didn't have a specific comment, but they did lay out, you know, what the salary could be, plus her endorsements could get upwards into this, because she's somebody who's going to, you know, you've already seen her endorsements while she's been a college star. It's a big play by Ice Cube, and it would get eyeballs on it initially. But yeah, I would just be fascinated to see how her game gels into a 3-on-3 game against men and women as well, I guess.
At first, I saw this as just the Big Three, and I love Ice Cube being like, well, we didn't want to get that out there.
No,
you sure about that? When most of the country is paying attention to women's college basketball and paying attention at a higher rate than they've ever done before, their biggest star, you sure you didn't want to have that connection during their most viewed time of the year? But just looking at some of the salaries or some of the total earnings for WNBA stars, Erica Wheeler's topping the list at $242,000. Arik Ogunbowale, Diana Taurasi, each with $234,000. Like, it's not a lot that WNBA players make, especially rookies. Base salary of about $76,000 is what USA Today is projecting for Clark.
The salaries are still pretty low.
The first overall pick. So, if I was advising anybody on this, I'd be like, yeah, take the $5 million. The WNBA will be there for you after this.
And the endorsements, that's the other thing. Like, yes, you can factor in the endorsements as Caitlin Clark will still be making a lot of money when she gets to WNBA, even though her salary will be relatively low, because she'll still probably be, you know, a seven-figure earner.
Yes.
With endorsements.
She'll make a couple million. She'll make a million or
but
two.
But she could still do endorsements if she did Big Three.
And I also wonder if she can help open the door for other women's college basketball players that have three-point prowess to join in on the Big Three, and they make it kind of a co-ed league.
Yeah.
Because you're not pulling anybody from the college game, so there aren't any stars anymore. That if you were to say, you know, Angel Reese wanted to do this and the WNBA, who's to say they couldn't double dip with this?
And they've had former NBA players, but never current NBA players. No. They've never been able to work out a deal to make that allowed.
They couldn't get back into the NBA, or their fringe G League guys.
Or just old guys who have retired and
right,
want to play for a little
that they
bit.
Used. This can, you kind of capitalize on their early success, play a couple of seasons with the Big Three, still do WNBA, and then make the choice after your contract with Ice Cube's up.
I can't believe the Big Three has $5 million to give Caitlin
Clark. Ice Cube has $5 million to give Caitlin Clark.
No, I can't imagine that there are too many guys who play in the Big Three over a 10-week period and get $5 million. That can't be a good marketing plan. And again, like you said, maybe this isn't even really meant to be pay Caitlin Clark $5 million, but put out a number that is big enough where she has to entertain the idea. Plus, people start talking about it, and it's just all free publicity for the Big Three, a league that, no, I don't really ever think about. I mean,
no, until things like this, you don't pay any attention to the Big Three.
Even when it's on, it's not something. I've caught it before.
What's
it's different.
I don't even know where it's, where do the games
go? I think it travels.
Where is it broadcast? Yeah, where do they play?
Yeah, I think the whole league goes to a city each week, and maybe they've like set up camp in Las Vegas, but the teams are not associated with their own cities.
Now you got me Googling the Big Three.
Well, I was looking into it, and it was the rules stuff that I was like, so how does a play start? There's no inbounds. You just start at the top of the key. It's a lot like pickup basketball in that way. There's no jump ball. They just like inbounded at the beginning of the game. They play to 50 points. They are two halves. It goes to halftime when one of the team reaches 25. So it does really not look that much like basketball once you really start to look into the rules.
So what I'm looking at, June 15th is week one. They're doing that all in Oakland. Week two, the 22nd of June, they're doing all that in Florida.
So it's a traveling league, kind of like how the PLL does it right now with the lacrosse. If you bring in a star like Caitlin Clark, that's what they're seeing. Is like, how do we get people to go? Well, everybody's going to all the Caitlin Clark games.
You could also,
we get her in our league, we start to sell out.
Capitalize on a Jack Golke.
Yeah.
If he has a hot tournament run a couple months later, then you could see him in the Big Three.
We made our own list this week. All right, higher or lower, coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
Common Man and T-Bone are idiots. You should listen to them anyway.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan, Ohio's idiot destination.
Atlas Butler Plumbing Services. Keeping things flowing. Like water through your pipes. And water down your drains.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And phone numbers through your brain. Call today.
Our top men are working on everything. Except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends, Chaps and Eric Reeser with you all this week. We're going to get to higher or lower in just a moment. But before that, you heard it in the update. It's opening day, kind of across Major League Baseball. Technically, the Padres and the Dodgers already played.
I hate that we have to add that caveat to it.
It's so weird that
they've played regular season games.
It's not even that it was before the actual regular season. I get it. A trip to South Korea would be tough for a baseball team because they play just about every day.
Japan next year.
But they do already build in some of those weird series so that if there are places that can get rained out, like they can immediately make it up. But either way, they play that. The weirder part for me, though, was that they came back and played more spring training.
Yep.
How do you play games that count and then go back and play three games that don't?
Because shut up.
Well, good thing nothing happened story-wise with the Dodgers while they were over there.
It was really good that everybody was focused on the actual games that took place. And really, if like, was it 15-11 was the second game of the series in extra innings. And it's like both of those were glorified exhibition contests, or at least the Dodgers hope so. Cause I think Yamamoto got crushed in his first outing. So, and this whole month, kind of an exhibition. Like Baker, I don't know about you, but you know, especially for the Guardians with this being Steven Vogt's first season, this first time the Guardians haven't started a season without Terry Francona in like it's 2013. So it's just strange. And I know for the Reds, obviously they still have some continuity, but Craig Counsell's now with the Cubs. So how do things shake out in the NL Central with that? I mean, he was with Milwaukee, still in the damn division.
First opening day in Cincinnati, I believe since 07 without Votto.
Wow.
Weird.
Maybe 08. One of those two.
Yeah. I mean, he has been around that long. I remember watching Votto all throughout growing up, through middle school, through high school. That's why it was so weird to hear the news. That was actually when we were over in London. That was one of the like things that was big enough to come across for me to like focus on over there. As far as the Reds go, their opening day always down in Cincinnati. They've got the parade. Get your skyline, get your beer ready. A 4:10 first pitch in that one. They're taking on the Nationals. The Guardians, they don't get opening day at home, and it's not even close to home. They are out in Oakland taking on the Athletics. The last year that it is on the books that Oakland or that the Athletics are going to play in Oakland, but it is unclear where they're going to play between Oakland and actually building their stadium in Las Vegas. The real detriment to all of this, though, and we talked about it yesterday, we talked about it at the beginning of the show, 10:07 first pitch. And then they're in Seattle. So their first seven games out in West Coast time for the Guardians.
Yeah, I guess if you're, what, staying up to watch Illinois, Iowa State, then your second screen might be Guardians Athletics.
Will your second screen be Guardians Athletics?
Probably. Probably first screen will be Guardians Athletics. I do want to see what Shane Bieber looks like. And that could be an early night. I was thinking about that coming in today. I was wondering how many innings he's realistically expect him to go. If it all goes well for...
What's left in the tank for him at this point?
I don't know.
Yeah.
This is fifth straight opening day start?
Fifth straight opening day start. So I think it's tied for second all-time in franchise history. But it just... So much of the season last year you chalked up to, well, which part of his body's not working? So I hope all of his body is working tonight, but you have no idea with Bieber right now.
Time for a little higher or lower.
Bishop and Friends present Higher or Lower.
All right, guys, we're taking this higher or lower this week from the Baker Basketball Index.
Okay, the BBI.
Did you file a trademark on that?
It's in process right now. I got my best legal people on it. So this is ranking the Sweet 16 teams left, according to me. The first four, we've got UConn, Houston, Arizona, then North Carolina. Higher or lower for the group of teams?
I think as I look at that, you know, it's 3-1 seeds and a 2 seed in there. And it's not the 2 seed that I'm worried about, because I've been really impressed with the way Caleb Love has played for Arizona and the way they've looked in this tournament. But it's where Caleb Love came from. I don't know if I can trust the Tar Heels. I'm gonna have them just a little bit lower because, yes, they made it all the way to the national championship game where national runners-up a couple of years ago had a very disappointing year last year. I don't know how losing Caleb Love made them better, but they're obviously performing better. But I still am just going to drop them just a spot lower. We'll get into the next grouping and who that I would bring up into that. But that's out of those, I like the top three that you have there with one UConn. Houston had the scare against A&M, but they're still a really strong team. And Arizona has looked really good throughout the tournament.
I think I would swap Arizona and UNC just because in March you've got a guy like Armando Bacot, old basketball player. Like, that really helped you. You've seen it with UConn and Houston. And you could talk me into, if you had had Houston at one instead of UConn, I'd be like, okay, I can see that just based on the totality of what they've done to get to where they are now. But man, UConn just clubbed Northwestern to death.
I think going into the tournament, I probably would have had Houston ahead of UConn, but UConn's looked pretty darn good here so far. Okay, the next grouping here, 5 through 8, we've got a couple Big Ten teams. At number 5, Purdue. Number 6, Iowa State. At 7, Tennessee. And number 8, Illinois. Higher or lower with these?
Purdue is the team that I'm going to move ahead of UNC. I do hear you on it, and it doesn't make me a hypocrite and a Big Ten homer because I said I don't know if I can trust this UNC team and then turn around and say, hey, put Purdue ahead of it, because, yes, it is hard to trust the Matt Painter-led teams in the tournament. Purdue has been disappointing. They were a 1 seed, lose to a 16 seed last year. But Zach Edey looks even more so like the best player in the country right now. And if you find yourself in situations where they can prioritize and get him the ball, he's pretty much unstoppable. Now he's going to have tougher competition going up. Some guys who are going to be at least a little bit closer to his height. There aren't very many guys in the tournament who are at his height, but I've been really impressed with Purdue. And so I cannot wait for Friday night for them to lose and me to sound like an idiot.
Yeah. Gonzaga. Again, nobody has the size of a Zach Edey, but they're bigger. Like, they've got a couple of guys that are touching 7 and that have a little bit more girth to them than, you know, players for Utah State. So I'm really interested in Gonzaga and Purdue. But I think, and this, again, it could just be from recency, I'd still have the Boilers a little lower than Iowa State, a little lower than Tennessee, and maybe lower than Illinois, because...
Oh, you're really dropping
Illini. I won the Big Ten tournament.
There was a big part of me that wanted to drop Purdue a lot lower. They have looked pretty good so far in the tournament. I'm questioning, though, the caliber of opponent they've played so far.
That's exactly what I'm doing. And I'm going to stick with Purdue being lower on this list, but Iowa State, Tennessee, Illinois. I've Purdue below all of them. I'd have it be Iowa State, Tennessee, Illinois, then Purdue.
Iowa State has looked pretty good this year.
Really good.
I think Illinois might be the toughest team to rank in this right now. Because they've looked really good. They won the Big Ten tournament. They're a three seed, so they're already high up there. But I just don't know for sure.
And they have a guy that can get buckets when you need buckets.
You guy in Terrence Shannon guy in March, Jr. Right.
Guys, the next group, and we start at 9, Duke, number 10, Creighton, 11, San Diego State, and number 12, Marquette.
I think Marquette should be a little bit higher in this. I know it's easy to say with them being the two seed, but they just got trounced by UConn in that regular season matchup. They were good throughout the rest of that, and I'm going to put them at the head of this group. So I'm going to take them from 12 and put them at 9 ahead of Duke, Creighton, and San Diego State. I'm really interested to see what the Aztecs do tonight against UConn, because obviously a win against UConn, you know, they were in that game last year in the national title against them. Do they have enough experience against this team to actually give them a shot and maybe even pull off the upset? Then they jump right up, but not enough for San Diego State right now to move them up for me.
Yeah, I really like San Diego State and Marquette, but I think I'd have Marquette is good where it's at. I think you may have San Diego State move ahead of Duke and Creighton. San Diego State right now would be in the top ten.
San Diego State, I'm rooting for them hard. I hope you're right there, Reese. And then our final four here in this ranking, we've got 13 Alabama, number 14 Gonzaga. At 15, I've got NC State, and then at 16, Clemson. Higher or lower?
Well, I wanted to check something because it's not like I watched a ton of NC State and Clemson ball throughout the season this year. So by my count, it looks like they only played once in the regular season. So that was actually an NC State victory. So I wanted to make sure that we weren't jumping to conclusions with, hey, the hot team, let's put them ahead of it. So, but I think
you'd be okay with doing that.
No, I think it's fair too. I just wanted to compare. They're right next to each other, and I think it's right that NC State and Clemson are the two weakest left. I just wanted to make sure that there wasn't some sort of ACC disparity that I wasn't paying attention to. Like, what if Clemson had beaten them by 30 in February? That would be enough for me to be like, well, Clemson, I think,
I would see where you would say that if that was the case.
NC State, though, has just been really hot right now. But the fact that they won then their first two games in the NCAA tournament is, it's just one of those things where it's like, okay, are they hot or are they just better than they were showing throughout the year and improved? They're one of the more exciting teams right now. DJ Burns, their big forward, he's fun to watch. I think I'm cool, though, with this listing. Maybe I would flip Gonzaga and Alabama, because I do think, even though what I said about Purdue, I think the Zags have a shot against the Boilermakers tonight.
I would also have Gonzaga higher. I'd also have NC State higher. The Wolfpack, for me right now, would be within spitting distance of the top 10.
And not tonight. The Gonzaga-Purdue game is tomorrow. But there you have it. There's our higher or lower. We'll check back in with the Baker Basketball Index sometime next year when Bo's on spring break, and we'll see what we can come up with. Coming up, looks like the advanced stats like the Buckeyes defense. Hey, I do too. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
All the 10 TV people come over to our side of the building to take a deuce. That should tell you something about how we operate.
The Fan. Atlas Butler Plumbing Services. Keeping things flowing. Like water through your pipes. And water down your drains.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And phone numbers through your brain. Call today.
Producers, co-hosts, friends, some of those things are true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
See, now this is something that I didn't think was still ongoing. I thought it had gone through. He's been at games. I'm looking at a picture right now of Alex Rodriguez and this Mark Lohr guy both holding up. One's got a Timberwolves jersey, one got the Minnesota Lynx, the WNBA team, but according to this news today, the Minnesota Timberwolves have announced that Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lohr's option to acquire controlling interest in the Timberwolves and Lynx has expired. Quote, the Timberwolves and Lynx are no longer for sale, which got me thinking, wasn't this like the plan B for A-Rod? Remember a few years ago, Alex Rodriguez, man, that was 4 years ago now, he was engaged to Jennifer Lopez, who is now married to Ben Affleck, but they were a part of a group that was trying to buy the New York Mets. That fell through for them. His engagement fell through.
Wait, she's Jenny from the Bronx, not... Jenny from Queens.
Yeah, no, I guess not. I mean, it's from the block. There's blocks all over New York City. She's actually been getting dragged a little bit the last few weeks because of her documentary. One, she made like a rock opera kind of thing. It wasn't rock, but it was like an opera, like the idea of it, like making a long music video. Then she made a documentary about it, and everybody is making fun of like the thing she says because it just sounds so generic and fake, like she's not actually from New York or can't really remember what it's like to be like on the streets. She just says,
well,
like,
she's been away from it for so long, like,
but then just don't try to pretend,
I guess.
Either way, we get back to A-Rod. Loses out on his fiance, loses out on the Mets, says, okay, consolation prize, I'll try to buy a basketball team in Minnesota. Now he can't even get that done. That's a tough road for him.
I mean, I wonder with all of these guys, with all of these former players getting in on team ownership, there are more and more actual owners, current owners, when they're looking to sell, being like, do you have the cash available now? Like, I don't know, with, you know, the Dodgers, with all the money Magic Johnson was throwing around, right? It feels like he's in on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of these, so many different people are making this play for sports teams. It's for the owners. It's like, this is just becoming too much.
Yeah, and they're
I want to sell to one person.
We're gonna stop having owners, and they're just gonna be owned by ownership VCs. Groups,
yeah. Right.
And then you put the celebrity out there, but A-Rod is not the one. He doesn't have that kind of money. He's a very rich man, but he does not have buy NBA team type money. So they have to find it from other investors. And yeah, that is going to be a weird part of it. So sorry, A-Rod. I did marry Jennifer Lopez, but I did not buy the Minnesota Timberwolves. That is not something that
you gotta have Haslam money to get into this.
Yes,
my guess is so. The Haslams bought 5%. Might have been a little bit more than that in the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah,
so that's a minority ownership stake.
It was weird because it was first reported what the 5% they paid multiplied by 20.
You try to do the math on it, you can't ever get a 100% accurate idea of what exactly they paid without talking to them.
Yes.
Without them letting you know exactly what they paid. A-Rod has a lot of money. I don't know if he has Jimmy Haslam money.
No, and maybe they do still own a minority stake, and this was to get more to possibly, yeah. So Mark Lowe and Alex,
looking to buy the whole thing.
They had a 90-day window to gain controlling interest of the franchise, and that expired today. So
yeah,
I do think they have some sort of ownership stake still in this, but they were trying to buy an additional ownership stake to make them the majority owners.
I read that. And I was like, they couldn't come up with enough.
No, there was a story last week about an investor dropped out and they tried to come up with a new investor. Either that person didn't come through or the people selling it didn't want to sell.
So many damn promises like you've got to make and then you've got to actually deliver on with so many different people. This is, that would be a headache.
Yes. I mean, that's multiple $1 billion now. Sports franchises are just worth so much. You know, it used to be Jerry Jones could spend a few $100 million. It was just $100 million to buy the Cowboys. And now the Cowboys are worth like $8 billion.
So an interesting thing with Jerry is the Big 12 is doing its media day at Jerry World.
Okay.
In Arlington, Texas. And I got this from Albert Breer, who's retweeting this one sports attorney in Houston who's just crapping on the Big 12 Pro Day. Not really sure what the purpose of having a Big 12 Pro Day is. No results updates despite there being a video board, no music, zero juice. Players haven't even been together to build enough camaraderie. Has the ambience of a college library on a fall Saturday. And Breer chimes in, if you're being a cynic, you could say the purpose of a Big 12 Pro Day is so the Cowboys can have a dry run at running a combine because they want Jerry World to host the big one, and so the league can see it and work out the kinks too.
I guess the NFL Combine has some fanfare, but why does a Pro Day need fanfare around it? What I don't understand the critique of a Pro Day. It's for people to go and check out the players, and if you put it in a centralized location, especially for a Big 12 that is probably not going to have NFL teams clamoring to go to individual teams based on the teams that make up that conference, I wonder if the non-SEC Big 10 schools will start to go for that.
I guess the one criticism is compare and contrast to BYU's Pro Day, where there's music, it's active, they're posting results immediately, family and friends get there, there's juice. None of that in Frisco.
Why does there need to be juice around a Pro Day? It's to watch guys throw and run around.
Yeah, no, my biggest takeaway was Breer saying that the Big 12 is doing the dry run for the NFL because they do want to shop the combine around. It's in Indy next season, but my guess is Jarrow would want to have that.
Buckeye defense popular with the advanced analytics at Pro Football Focus. Max Chadwick, who we've had on this show before, he ranked the top 10 returning players at every defensive position. Well, that helps out the Buckeyes a lot because they've got a lot of returning players that could have been draft eligible. Some of these guys could have even been day two picks, but they decided to come back. At defensive end, two of them make the list. You know who they are. At three, Jack Sawyer, and eight, JT Tuimoloau. Jack Sawyer gets the not only just the bump ahead of JT, but a considerable amount ahead of him overall in these rankings because PFF, they love their numbers. And their numbers say that Jack Sawyer is consistent on both pass and run plays. And it does make you question a little bit like, hey, where could Jack Sawyer be had they not played around with that Jack Leo thing with him a couple of years ago and really just put him on the defensive line? JT Tuimoloau, though, we know that he can play better than anybody on any given day if he can ever harness what he did at Penn State a few years ago, too.
Yeah, I was annoyed with it 2 years ago, but I've come off it since that, yes, to quit messing around with this player who's see ball, get ball. And it's tough for JT to have a stat line like he did against Penn State because it's just almost impossible to replicate. It's like the song that you hear in one of our commercials is strikeouts, base hits, double plays. And so for a team to have a pitcher throw a strikeout and then have it the infield turn it into a double play, it's impossible, Scott Stapp. You cannot do that. JTT, to try to replicate a Penn State stat line like he did, what would have been 22?
Hey, yes.
Impossible.
Hey, maybe once the video game comes out, he can replicate it on there.
Oh, sure.
Number one on this list for defensive ends is Jame Pierce Jr. for Tennessee. Yeah, he had a game against Iowa in the Outback Bowl. Defensive tackle, one is Mason Graham at Michigan, and
that checks.
The Michigan player shows up on another number one spot here, but it's not the wrong choice. Tylik Williams does make the top five, though. One of the in the write up though about it, he's bulking up. Now who knows how true every time they put a number out there in a program is? But he was listed at 290 last year, and now he's listed at 327. So if he can still play it that way, that's the one thing you worry about. Does it start to take away some of his athletic ability? But if he can still play it that weight, that's 30 more pounds, almost 40 more pounds to throw around.
So when you say that, I get to thinking maybe that's why Jim Knowles is talking about big boy fronts, like doing that double eagle, five down defensive line. He's got a 320-pound defensive tackle that can move like a defensive end. If he can do that, all right.
On the cornerback
list,
a
lot of fun here.
Will Johnson for Michigan. No, I don't have a problem with that. That guy's really good.
Yeah.
But he did, in single coverage, didn't quite live up to I can guard anybody against Marv, but they did get the victory.
I will I'll forgive anybody for having a bad day against the route man, even if he is a Michigan player.
Denzel Burke makes it to number seven on the returning cornerbacks list. 19.1% catch rate for him. That was in the top 10 last year in single coverage. So he's a guy who you can put out on an island, and he can guard any receiver that you ask him to go on. And then a Buckeye does make number one on the list. Caleb Downs at safety.
Yep.
So he hasn't played for the
Who's
Buckeyes
officially
yet.
Official as a Buckeye because he lost his black stripe.
Oh, hopefully that. But he deleted OSU from his Instagram bio, right?
Wait, did he?
I don't know. I thought you said that last
There's
week.
There's no way I would have said something like that without knowing. Because if it did happen, I would have absolutely said that.
I don't know. He's going to be the one, though, that we're going to have to deal with the rumors. There's been rumors about, after the Caden Proctor stuff, can he jump back to Alabama? That right when he was here, there was rumors he might go to Michigan.
Have Ohio State in his Instagram bio.
Oh, no.
But he does have used the code Caleb for 10% off of his gear.
Okay.
He's got his NIL shop.
What's his gear? Is his gear Buckeye themed or is it just Caleb Downs themed? These are the questions you have to ask to get to the bottom of what these college kids are thinking.
This is. Innovative football equipment, gloves, socks, mouthpieces, and more.
Point of the segment, PFF thinks Ohio State's defense is going to be good. I agree with them. They've got players at all these levels, but let's get those linebackers onto it. I understand from a returning standpoint, Steele and Tommy Eichenberg are gone. Okay, not a linebacker that you can rank in here, but James taking over as the full-time coach. Let's get him going, threes.
With that, because PFF uses certain things to grade linebackers, does Ohio State have what you would consider a true linebacker in their defensive schemes? that would be applicable to what PFF's ranking is. Does that make sense?
They have one in the Tommy Eichenberg right? And then Cody Simons taking over that role. That is for sure linebacker, but you're right with the idea of, well, what's Sonny Styles' role going to be at linebacker?
What's PFF going to grade Sonny Styles?
Yeah.
And what are they going to grade him as?
And when do you graduate from, you're linebacker, but we look at you as edge, which that we just need to make that official. Edge is a position. There's no longer outside linebackers who just happen to rush the passer. That's edge. I think we can all agree on it. And I'm not going to let anybody else tell me otherwise.
Yeah.
Blue Jackets, they finish their road trip tonight versus the Penguins. We'll check in with Jody Shelley from Pittsburgh. Shelley time up next. Bishop and Friends on The Fan.
This Ohio State football spring practice report is brought to you locally on The Fan by Roosters and by your Ohio Kubota dealers.
Ohio State football spring practice report.
There are a number of areas where Ohio State has considerable depth, especially at the running back spot with Travion Henderson.
Of course, when you're that guy and taking a lot of the reps, of course you get tired and those things like that, but having another fresh back comes in like Quinshon, and of course we got James, Dallin, Sam, all those guys, the young guys, can also come in.
Henderson also talked about his decision to return to play another season for the Buckeyes.
Before the Missouri game, I was actually leaning on leaving. So I was eventually supposed to leave, and I was praying on it and things like that. But, man, God rescued me in that decision. I'm so thankful that he rescued me in that decision because physically was I ready to go to the league. But just spiritually, my relationship with the Lord and, where I'm at with him, it's just I wasn't ready yet. And it's more I still needed to go through here.
This report brought to you by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center and by Safe Flat Auto Glass on the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
When you need urgent care and you need it fast, Where You Go makes all the difference. When you choose advanced urgent care from the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center, you're choosing an advanced level of urgent care led by Ohio State emergency physicians. We offer walk-in treatment for more serious illnesses and injuries such as broken bones, abdominal pain, and pneumonia. All with shorter wait times and less cost than an emergency department. When your illness or injury can't wait, the choice is clear.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safe Flight Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. Man, I love that. Schedule at SafeLight.com. Safe Flight Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Safe Light Repair, Safe Light Replace.
Everybody knows that Roosters is a fun, casual joint with their award-winning waitstaff, great food, fun, and laughter. It's a quick stop on the way home to sit back and unwind or grab a carryout. Roosters is where you, your family, and friends can order pizza, sandwiches, salads, and more. And the home of award-winning wings that are fresh, never frozen. It's your family's other dinner table. Roosters, a fun, casual joint.
Get a great deal on select Kubota equipment. The number one rated tractor brand for durability and owner experience in the U.S. The versatile lineup is built to help you make the most of your land. Right now at participating dealers, get a Kubota compact tractor for zero down, 0% APR for 84 months, plus save up to $800 on qualifying implements. Now through October 31st, see us or go to KubotaUSA.com/disclaimers for full disclaimer.
Atlas Butler Plumbing Services. Keeping things flowing. Like water through your pipes and water down your drains.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And phone numbers through your brain. Call today.
Drop the gloves. It's Shelly time.
Sponsored by Schottenstein Roofing. Proud partner of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
We're going to head out onto the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Talk to our good friend Jody Shelley. A little bit of Shelley time, as you just heard in the open. They are in Pittsburgh tonight for a date with the Penguins. Face off at 7 o'clock. You can hear that game right here on The Fan. Jody, I saw a concerning stat this morning, and I want to ask you your take on it. The Blue Jackets really haven't won a game in the regular season at Pittsburgh since 2015. Do you have any reason why that could be, or is that just a weird anomaly of a stat?
Yeah, I don't know. Isn't that strange to hear that?
I mean, that's a long time coming to Pittsburgh and not picking up a victory. I hate to say it. It's just one of those things. It's just the matchup in the playoffs created a rival for the Blue Jackets and the Penguins, and it just seems like the guy that used to hurt them the most, Gensel, now he's gone. He got traded to Carolina. Pittsburgh's not playing well, so maybe they can break that tonight.
I was about to ask, Jody, can the motivation for this team to help spoil kind of the last part of this Pittsburgh run, I think they're, 9 points the Penguins are out of the wild card, can that be used as a great motivator? Can you, as a captain, say that to your team, like, we can spoil their season or help spoil that season? Or is it just like, look, boys, let's just play our 60 minutes the best way we can?
No, I think there's definitely that. The fact that they haven't won here in that long, that's a motivator. You know, I think they need more than a motivator right now. I mean, the last few games, like even that Arizona game, you know, playing the first 20 minutes and then letting the game get away, it's, you know, it's focus, it's commitment. Those are the things that when you have that one goal lead that you look for. It doesn't matter where you are in the standings or what happened the previous 70 games. You know, you're in the middle of a hockey game where, and Arizona plays hard and they've got some good veteran guys, but I just think that's the motivation is, hey, it's just not good enough right now. And those narratives get taken down that we just talked about when you can put the full effort in. But it's not many games this season where we've seen a full 60 minutes, and it's been a while since we've seen more than one period out of this as a team as far as team play. And they've got to change that here. And I'm watching them skate right now, and you know, they just got pretty good talking to by head coach Pascal Vincent, and we'll see if this practice, it looks like it's all business, translates into tonight.
Jody, Blue Jackets currently on a 5-game losing streak. They do have the overtime loss against Detroit, but the other finals, 6-1, 6-1, 4-2, 6-2. Do you find that the guys are down? Are they dejected? Are they embarrassed? Are they apathetic? How is it going to go for these last 10 games when you compare it to the last 5 games? You know, you've repeat that 2 more times over. It's a really bad way to end the year.
Yeah. I don't know how they're really feeling as far as, you know, if they feel dejected or whatever, but you know, they're sick of losing, that's for sure. Those scores get away from them in the second period. You know, that's where the game is. Like the other night in Arizona, they gave up 2 goals in the second after being up by 1 goal after 1. Still in the game, but then there's segments of letdowns. And does it have to do with having 7 call-ups in the lineup? I don't really buy into that. I just think it's circumstantial. I think some of the veteran guys as well have made, you know, the errors. So, I go back to, you know, the focus for the last 10 games. It's these guys, it's an 82-game season, and it doesn't really matter how you feel about the previous games, how they played here on this road trip. I know there's been some really good teams, and that's fine. But for me, the Arizona one really bothers me because it's like, it's a team that's out of the playoffs, well out of the playoffs. You know, you want to see the effort for the full game, and I just think all the feelings and stuff right now, it doesn't really matter. They need to finish the season the right way. And you get a chance to be spoiler, which you can do if you can play like, you know, how you start games. And against Pittsburgh here now, a team that's desperate, you got a home and home. You know, there should be a lot of juice in these games here in the next 48 hours.
Jody, as you walk around PPG Paints today, I think it's April 6th or the 7th where the Pens are going to be giving out that Jaromir Jagr bobblehead. Have you been able to lay eyes on that? And I mean, that's one of the more wild stories of the year where the team actually has to negotiate or renegotiate for the return of a stolen bobblehead shipment.
Yeah, isn't that odd? No, I have not seen them. I'm sure they're on lockdown at this point.
Right, you got to have them behind lock and key and a gate.
Pretty valuable, and I guess all the fans that were here for the game where they were supposed to get the Jagr bobblehead got a voucher to get it, so maybe they got some extra ones as well. But if I find one,
because I'm wondering,
you know what I'm going to do,
what the resale of those is going to be. Because it's not only a Jaromír Jagr bobblehead, which Pens fans and hockey aficionados would love, but this is one that was stolen en route to Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Sounds like a move by a collector.
Or, you know, Jody, if you do find your hands on one, maybe like a Shody Jelly eBay account could throw it out there. We'll have a little bit of fun here at the end. This will be Bo inspired, but you're finishing up this long road trip. You end up in Pittsburgh. One, what's the amenities? Are we talking two bathrobe situation? And also, did you get a Pittsburgh style steak in Pittsburgh?
You know, I didn't. It's been a heck of a road trip. I've had a lot of good meals and some great cities. We weren't in Vegas very long, but, you know, whatever. We missed that this year. I've been in this hotel in Pittsburgh for over a decade now. So when I was with the Flyers, I felt like this was my home away from home because we were here in the playoffs a couple times, and I get to Columbus as a broadcaster, same hotel. You know, we get that playoff series and seeing these guys so often. So, it's a nice hotel, we'll put it that way, but it's nothing over the top. It's, I enjoy the area we're in. We're in a nice little area by the square. We've had 2 days of sunshine. We got here, you know, one thing when you travel west, you get on the plane at 9 a.m. and you get off 3 hours later and it's 5 p.m. So we had a little nice evening last night just walking around, but I kept it simple. It's been a long, busy trip, and I felt like the stay inside and order room service was the way to go, and I never order room service, so that tells you
how long it's been.
What I needed, yeah. What I needed.
You guys will be back for some home cooking tomorrow, and then for another game against the Penguins at Nationwide on Saturday. Jody, for those who haven't heard, that's going to be the game that Jeff Rimmer is going to be honored for a legendary career. Correct me if, and I don't want to, you know, assume maybe is probably the right word, wrong thing to do, but if they've asked you for words to speak either before the game, during the game, or after the game, are you going to go with a prepared statement, or are these words coming right from the heart?
Well, that's a really good question. I will be involved some way. I'm better from the heart, but I feel like with my role, I might need something down on paper. You know, it's going to be a special night for Jeff. I know his speech. I think he had it at 35 minutes, but I think they've whittled it down due to timing with the presentation. I think it's going to be a short ceremony, but it's been a tough. This road trip is really, I've noticed with Jeff, it's been a turning point for him. You know, it's one thing to say you're going to be retired; that's emotional. It's one thing to be in game 60 and you know still a lot of the season left, but now we're down to 10 games. I think he sees his career and the buildings we go into. Coming to a quick end here, and he's going to be emotional. It's a big deal. The length of time he's been in the National Hockey League, he's going to miss doing the games, of course, and we're going to enjoy this stretch with him. I'm really looking forward to Saturday night because all of his family, he's going to have a lot of special friends in town, and it's going to be a really nice send-off for Jeff.
Only a couple more weeks left of Shelly time this year as well. Jody, thanks for joining us all season long.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
He's Jody Shelley up in Pittsburgh for that Shelley time. CBJ at the Penguins tonight at 7. You can hear that game right here on The Fan. He was on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline.
And with Tipico's new rewards, you'll get up to 5% cash back on every qualifying bet. Maybe you want to get in on some of that action on the ice tonight or Saturday, or I think someone told me it's opening day. In a certain sport, enjoy the highest cashback in the industry with the most rewarding sports book. Claim Tipico's new sign-up bonus now. Get $100 in bonus bets when you bet $25. Sign up now and enter promo code THEFAN100 to get that bonus. Download the Tipico Sportsbook app to bet, earn, and win today. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Three things on a Thursday up next. Bishop and Friends on The Fan.
Wake up with The Fan. Eat lunch with The Fan. Go to bed with The Fan. Dream about The Fan. Then change your sheets. Gross.
Ew, you guys are gross, but stick around in case I don't find anyone else.
Atlas Butler Plumbing Services. Keeping things flowing. Like water through your pipes. And water down your drains.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And phone numbers through your brain. Call today.
The uncle you never knew you had.
The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
Three things coming up in just a moment. But before we do that, Reeser, what do we have on the fan poll today?
Daily fan poll sponsored by ER Auto Care, masters of our craft. Today's fan poll asks, how much of your baseball team's opening day game will you watch or listen to? 42% say none of it.
How many of them say that they don't have a baseball
7%.
Team?
7%. Some of it, all of it are other options. All of it is just shark. Some of it, 31%. None of it, again, leading the way at 42%. I don't have a team, 7%.
Okay, so they actually did put the option of I don't have a team?
Actually put the I don't care.
It's not, I would say I don't quite have a team, which I guess
are you kind of translated. Are you a Yankees fan? Like, don't you live in a Yankees household?
That's what I've been told, that we live in a Yankees household. I definitely lean red. Like, I like when the Ellie De La Cruz thing happened. That was exciting to me because I've been to a lot of Reds games throughout my life, but it's not. It's not like I'm keeping up day to day.
Hunkered down to watch opening day today?
No.
They're at 4:10. They got the Astros at 4:10.
She's definitely not an active Yankees fan. I'll without her having a chance to defend herself, I'll just throw that out there for her. But she will wear the cap. I told the story of it at Stonehenge. She said Yankees to the security guard who's wearing a Yankees hat, and he's like, "So what?"
Yeah, I mean, I think if you just shout anything to the Irish people, they just think you're trying to fight them.
Yeah, well, in English people, Stonehenge is in England.
Whatever.
Time for three things.
One, two, three things.
Sponsored by Custom Air. Custom Air. Custom Solutions. Custom Comfort.
First one for me. No, I don't think I could be this guy, but I do think Draymond Green has a pretty nice setup because I wish I could come in here every once in a while, say some nonsense for the first 4 minutes of a show, get ejected, and then everybody's like, yeah, it's just part of who he is, but we need him out there, and he's not going to get kicked off the team. To me, it's pretty clear that they're just going to let him do this for basically ever until like his skills fully diminish. But he's gotten over a decade of basically being this guy with the Warriors. It's a really nice setup for him. I was just talking with Matty Ice in the break. Yeah, you're right. What he said is that like it looks like Draymond Green doesn't even want to play last night. That exactly
comes in, pulls a Draymond, leaves.
Why would you be arguing to the point of getting two technicals 3.5 minutes into a game on a foul call?
Because he can't. He's done enough in his career to warrant that. There are few people that can get away with it. It would be like here. There are only a few people I believe that could get away with dropping an F-bomb undumped and still coming to work the next day. Yeah. But there are people in this building that could get away with it. Say they didn't want to work one day. As soon as the show comes on, they say, bleep this. It doesn't get dumped. And they're able to continue.
And it wouldn't be worth it right now. There's only 4 minutes left in the show.
Oh, I agree. I'm not saying anything. Got a couple from the corrections department. So okay. We had talked about Alex Rodriguez trying to buy majority ownership stake of the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Minnesota Lynx. So Glenn Taylor, who owns them right now, he says they're not for sale any longer. I'm putting the kibosh on it. Major Wojnarowski, the relationship between Glenn Taylor and his successors, Mark Lohr and Alex Rodriguez, disintegrated over the past two seasons. Sources telling ESPN this. Lohr and Rodriguez did raise enough money necessary to purchase the controlling interest, but Glenn Taylor contends they didn't meet contractual deadlines throughout the transition. So what that means to me is we go home to court.
Lawyer up.
Guys, poor job out of me today. I woke up this morning. It's early. I'm like getting ready and I'm thinking, oh, the Jackets have a game tonight. I'll just throw this Blue Jacket shirt on. Not even thinking that early in the morning. It's opening day. I should have some Reds gear on. Very poor job out of me.
Yeah, look at me and all my Guardians gear.
See, that's why for this shift, you got to plan it out. I actually put my clothes out the night before. That way I don't have to think about it in the morning. Just throw that on.
Rookie mistake out of me.
Preparedness. Second one for me, hey, I don't know if these guys were prepared for it, but it happened to them. So I saw this tweet yesterday from Ted Carter, new president at OSU, cheering on Ohio State softball tonight, joined the Big Ten Plus crew during the second inning, and had a great time chatting with student broadcasters. So I love the BTN Student U, if that's what they still call it, but that's what they called it when I was in school. Love that that's still going on. These young broadcasters at OSU right now, also members of Scarlet and Gray Sports Broadcasting, something that I was doing, and it's great that these opportunities are still there. I don't think I ever called softball, but I called some baseball games on my time, a lot of women's basketball games on BTN Student U as well. We never had the president of the university come on air with us. The closest I got to that was I once held the press box door for President Drake. That was the closest I got to rubbing elbows with the higher ups.
I've been kicking myself for about 90 minutes now. So when we talk to Paul Feinbaum at 10:30, like we do every Thursday. And if you want to hear back to our interview, go do so at 971BFS or just wait for the podcast that should come out in about 10 minutes. I didn't ask the nation's leading SEC expert on John Calipari in Kentucky. I had the basketball question loaded up for the end, and I forgot what I forgot the person's name. So I just went with Caitlin Clark. It's a horrible job out of me. I've been kicking myself for 90 damn minutes about that.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that's dropped the ball today.
How stupid, Eric.
Guys, I am pumped for opening day in this Red season, but I'm not a diehard baseball fan like I am Jackets fan, so I don't know how long this is going to last, but I'm going to enjoy the excitement for now.
Last one for me. I saw this story yesterday, but I remember when we talked about the international stuff for the NFL. The Chiefs, they are expected to sign rugby star Lewis Rees-Zammit per Schultz report. The plan is for him to be an offensive weapon used in various roles. All right, bring the rugby guy out there. I'm a big rugby guy now. The last 2 weeks or so, I've been trying to watch some rugby, but I'm excited to see what a rugby guy as an offensive weapon with Patrick Mahomes out there can do in Andy Reid's offense.
I'm going to have a very different take on this tomorrow, but I predict for the Cleveland Guardians this season, they will finish second in the AL Central with a record of 80-82. Probably tomorrow I'll be like, they're going to finish 60-95.
I would call that a bold 92. Prediction, but it's not exactly like reaching for the stars.
You love one-run baseball, brother. You're going to love watching the Cleveland Guardians play this season.
I thought earlier you said 74 wins for the Guardians.
I think that was their last season win total.
Okay.
I think they go slightly above that. Not much higher, but again, talk to me tomorrow after I've gotten a full one game into the 162-game season.
The Blue Jackets in Pittsburgh tonight, they haven't won there since 2015. I believe that's 15 straight regular season games, 18 if you include the playoffs. You haven't done much for me this year, Jackets. In this streak, I don't want to hear about it next year.
Yeah, I mean, remember when the Buckeye basketball team had that road losing streak? Road losing streak's never fun because then you just have to sit there at home and stew. You can sit there and listen to The Fan for the next 3 hours. Rothman and Ice coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The only show where sports talk is eclipsed by food talk.
Donuts.
Common Man and T-Bone.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan. This is a Fan Action Update.
This Action Update is brought to you by ESPN Bet. ESPN Bet, the official sportsbook of ESPN. Want to play? Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sweet 16 action in the NCAA tournament tonight. Arizona is a 7.5-point favorite over Clemson. UConn is giving 11.5 to San Diego State. In the late games, North Carolina is a 4.5-point favorite over Alabama. And Illinois is a 1.5-point underdog to Iowa State. For your ESPN Bet Action Update, I'm Scotty Vegas.
Atlas Butler Plumbing Services, keeping things flowing, like water through your pipes and water down your drains.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And phone numbers through your brain. Call today.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
The Fan.
Good afternoon. I'm Ryan Baker. It's opening day in Major League Baseball today. Down in Cincinnati, the Reds take on the Washington Nationals at 4:10. Newcomer Frankie Montas gets the start for Cincy opposite Josiah Gray. Late night start for the Cleveland Guardians is there in Oakland taking on the A's. Shane Bieber starts his fifth straight opener for Cleveland. Alex Wood goes for the A's. 10:07 first pitch in Oakland. We've got hockey on the Fan tonight as the Blue Jackets wrap up their 5-game road trip in Pittsburgh against the Penguins. Pre-game coverage here on The Fan begins at 6:30. Puck drop is at 7. The CBJ haven't won in Pittsburgh since 2015. Daniil Tarasov gets the start in goal. And the Sweet 16 gets underway tonight with 4 matchups. Clemson takes on Arizona at 7. Alabama faces UNC at 9:30. UConn and San Diego at 7.
Atlas Butler Plumbing Services. Keeping things flowing. Like water through your pipes. And water down your drains.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And phone numbers through your brain. Call today.